It's the morning of March 15th. We're chasing a tip about a man who's leaving the country. Our sources tell us he just took a carry-on bag through security that was packed with $1 million cash. You can do that as long as you fill out one of these government forms. The money is usually headed to the Middle East, Dubai, and points beyond. Our sources say last year alone, more than $100 million cash left MSP in carry-on luggage.
How much money do you think has been sent around fraudulently here inside Minnesota?
Over the years, I would say anywhere from $80 to $100 billion.
The Somalian fraud is nationwide.
Columbus, Ohio has the second largest Somali population after Minneapolis. The money is in suitcases in Columbus. It flies to Minnesota. It goes to Minneapolis. Then the couriers in Minneapolis pick up that money, combine it with the money in Minnesota, and take it overseas.
What's the name of the child care here?
I don't ask.
I ask, has this place ever been to child care? The woman says no. But obviously Washington state records tell a completely different story.
Yeah, this specific address is locked into Washington state records as a daycare.
Yeah.
They have made $210,000 just this year.
And how many kids again is this place registered for?
Oh, that's the fun part. Three.
Three kids?
So this place are licensed for nine children.
Okay, so this place is licensed for nine.
But they have six slots available.
Right.
Which means they only have three kids and they've raked in $210,000 in tax money.
The Somali Education Resource Center, Suite 301 here at 299 East Granville Road in Dublin, Ohio. Now, the deal is that $14 million into this center here, this is a single office. And by the way, there's nothing inside it. We've already looked. It is very, very, very much dark, and it looks like there's maybe a couch inside.
The Democrats continue to play the race card, of course.
Whether you're Somalian, Italian, Indian, Irish, Jewish, I don't care. If you're stealing billions of dollars from American taxpayers, funneling it to terror networks, you do not belong here. That's not called immigration in America. That is called criminality.
What do you make of this argument of failure to assimilate and sort of ruining America? How do you understand this?
I mean, when I think about Stephen Miller and his white supremacist rhetoric, it reminds me of the way the Nazis described Jewish people.
These people are just idiots. I'm at the point where it's become really hard to have an intellectual debate with any of these people, because the level of stupidity that they are displaying every single day is frankly embarrassing.
The idea that this is a white nation that needs to be preserved is a fascinatingly disgusting view.
He's always been a racist, a bigot, a xenophobic.
The one place where we thought we would never experience this is the U.S. goddamn states.
How is one race being targeted when that supposedly victimized race is robbing Americans from every walk of life?
I'm a licensed private investigator in California. I started looking into state records and I found ghost daycares. These are places where the state inspectors showed up. There would be 28 kids enrolled and there were no kids there in the middle of the day and in the middle of the week.
The Attorney General of Washington State has called the journalists that are investigating the fraud that's going on. Yeah, that's apparently harassment.
At Hilali Safia Child Care Center in Kent, Washington, they have received $863,000 since 2023.
I don't see any signs right off the bat that it's a child care.
Washington Attorney General Nick Brown has labeled it potential harassment that could lead to hate crime reports, emphasizing that unsubstantiated accusations and door knocking disrupts providers and families.
A lot of this is generated by the president and Elon Musk tweeting out unverified reports in Minnesota, and that quickly, you know, brew a storm across the nation. What I'm concerned about is YouTubers showing up at your porch and filming children.
This coming from an attorney general that is aggressively targeting Christians. But if you have nothing to hide, what?
Yeah! we're gonna make it, men!
Now look here. Even to this very day, I still have my trusty old trench knife from the war.
Order now at the AlexJonesStore.com.
Hello, friends. Welcome to my home. We have all kinds of supplements. Sometimes we have BOGO Sups. We're always coming out with new products, and this is one of my favorites. You can shop for all of our supplements and apparel right here on the phone app.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, Infowars.com, band.video. Very big show we have for you today. Raw Egg Nationalist will be joining me in the second hour, and then we'll take your calls, he and I together, in the third hour. We have a lot of stories to cover, of course. Tons of videos out of the World Economic Forum as Donald Trump swoops in and lets them all know who's boss. We love seeing it. But lots of big updates to this in terms of Greenland and NATO and the rise of digital ID and all of the other various and nefarious programs that they're foisting on us, imposing on us, whether we like it or not. So we'll get into all of that and, of course, health as well with the good doctor. But let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Wednesday, the 21st of January, 2026. Trump says he reached Greenland deal framework with NATO and backs off Europe tariffs. President Donald Trump said that he and NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte have formed the framework of a future deal with respect to Greenland. Trump said that as a result of the negotiations, he would no longer impose punitive tariffs on a slew of European countries that were set to begin February 1st. Stocks shot up immediately after Trump posted the update. In an interview with CBC's Joe Kernan, minutes after posting the statement, Trump described the Greenland framework as the concept of a deal. So it looks like we may be moving more in that direction. Again, Greenland continues to be a major topic of conversation at the World Economic Forum. Still just bizarre to me, but we'll report on it. I think it has almost everything to do with AI. I think they just want to make Greenland into a giant AI hub because it has so many natural resources and it's so cold up there that you can run server farms for super cheap. I just think the AI companies are trying to colonize Greenland for their own right. Meanwhile, Trump says people will be prosecuted for their role in the 2020 election. U.S. President Donald Trump said in Davos on Wednesday that people will be prosecuted for what they did in the 2020 election, which he again falsely claimed was rigged. Which, of course, it was rigged. And I'm glad to see that people might actually be held to account for it. I swear, if I could have a nickel for every headline that said something about the Trump administration threatening or will do, I mean, you know, if promises were money, we'd be the Federal Reserve. But as it stands, we got a lot of nothing being promised to us. Meanwhile, Americans brace for another snowstorm as ice threatens southern states. With many Americans still recovering from multiple blasts of snow and unrelenting freezing temperatures in the nation's northern tier, a new storm is set to emerge this weekend that could coat roads, trees, and power lines with devastating ice across a wide expanse of the south. The storm arriving late this week and into the weekend is shaping up to be a widespread, potentially catastrophic event from Texas to the Carolinas, said Ryan Mao, a former chief scientist of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, saying, I don't know how people are going to deal with it. And in same category as that, we'll show you a video of James O'Keefe undercover at Davos, getting the elite to admit that they've been spraying things into our air forever. Meanwhile, fury as Amazon Ring cameras are hooked up to ICE systems, as U.S. Customs and Enforcement agents wreak havoc on American communities. Big tech companies have been making themselves indispensable to the increasingly tyrannical state. Among them is Amazon subsidiary Ring, the company behind those AI doorbell cameras that have exploded in popularity over the last few years. Back in October, Ring announced that its devices would soon be looped into a network of Flock AI surveillance cameras. That network, an investigation by 404 Media found, has been available to local and federal police enforcement agencies like ICE, leaving many worried that their Ring doorbell cams are now feeding into a government panopticon. Which, yes, of course they are and have for years. The fact that it's being used by ICE now means that for once it might actually be used to catch criminals. That'd actually be a positive development. But of course it's the irony of the situation that we're in. We have to deport these criminals. We have to deport the illegal aliens. We have to empower ICE to do it. Unfortunately, instead of cooperating with us, instead of just allowing us to enforce basic national law, the left is instead attacking them and lying about them and framing the whole thing as if it's tyrannical. And so it's actually giving them all the excuse they need to actually do all of the things that are tyrannical, even though it's going to be used, against average Americans, regular citizens later. It's unfortunate because it is 100% the fault of the left putting us in this position. Finally, Australia has passed their new hate speech law. Australia's federal parliament has enacted a broad new legal package targeting hate, anti-Semitism, and extremism, passing the Combating Anti-Semitism, Hate, and Extremism Criminal and Migration Laws Bill 2026 with strong majorities in both chambers. The bill has several implications regarding free speech. Yes, folks, the rule of law and free speech itself is now officially dead in Australia, as government ministers can simply declare entire groups of people criminal with absolutely no trial, no ability for the people to argue back and represent themselves just by fiat and without, the ability to appeal. The government can just dictate that you are now a criminal, your friends are criminals, you guys being together is a criminal activity. And again, no appeal, no ability to argue back. So that's it. And at the same time, of course, they're trying to get rid of jury trials in the UK and doing everything they can to destroy the concept of jury trials here in America, as we very much are literally losing the fundamental basic building blocks of our society as we become a increasingly tyrannical slave race under the globalist. That's your Daily Dispatch, brought to you, of course, by TheAlexJonesStore.com. Starting today, every order placed at TheAlexJonesStore.com will receive a free T-shirt. As a $40 value, and it's a special limited edition T-shirt that cannot be purchased anywhere else. So if you want to get this collector's item, go now to TheAlexJonesStore.com. Make any purchase, and this very stylish T-shirt in your size comes free with the purchase. $40 value, absolutely free. What makes this deal so incredible is that there's no minimum spend limit. Literally every order placed will receive that free T-shirt. I'm not even sure how we're making money on this at this point. This deal will end Sunday, January 25th at midnight. Make sure to go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. Again, that's a $40 value, absolutely free T-shirt, no minimum spend. And make sure you're a VIP member while you're at it. And, of course, we have the new War Cry smelling salts, the maximum strength smelling salts that I will not do on air because they will make me look like I'm crying. They'll make me cry because they're just that powerful and strong and better than any other smelling salts I've ever used before, and I've used a few. With that, let's go to the World Economic Forum. We got a lot of videos out of the cabal meeting on a mountaintop in total secrecy and security at the Swiss resort there. Let's begin with Howard Lutnick, because he's been a very good spokesperson for Donald Trump, and he, like Trump, takes the argument to Davos and tries once again to explain to them, you have lost. It's time for you to get with the program. Stop trying to impose your thoroughly rejected scams on the rest of the world. Let's go to clip number two here. Howard Lutnick at the World Economic Forum.
Well, I think you should start at a much higher level.
Okay.
We are in Davos at the World Economic Forum. And the Trump administration and myself, we are here to make a very clear point. Globalization has failed the West and the United States of America. It's a failed policy. It is what the WEF has stood for, which is export, offshore, far shore, Find the cheapest labor in the world, and the world is a better place for it. The fact is, it has left America behind. It has left the American workers behind. And what we are here to say is that America First is a different model, one that we encourage other countries to consider, which is that our workers come first. We can have policies that impact our workers. Sovereignty is your borders. You're entitled to have borders. You shouldn't offshore your medicine. You shouldn't offshore your semiconductors. You shouldn't offshore your entire industrial base and have it be hollowed out beneath you. You should not be dependent for that which is fundamental to your sovereignty on any other nation. And if you're going to be dependent on someone, it darn well better be your best allies. Okay? And so that is a different way of thinking. It is completely different than the WEF. I viewed the WEF as not a flagpole in the middle, but in fact, they are the flag. Whichever way the wind blew, so it blew. You should have solar. You should have wind. Why are you going to do solar and wind? Why would Europe agree to be net zero in 2030 when they don't make a battery? They don't make a battery. So if they go 2030, they are deciding to be subservient to China, who makes the batteries.
So there you go. I don't know who put the guitar behind it, but it was a very good speech, very rousing pro-America speech. Of course, it's strange he has to tell them this. You understand, they know what they're doing. Again, there's always this question of, are they stupid or are they evil? And I'll admit, a lot of them are deeply unimpressive. Like, when you hear them talk, you think, how did this person run a lemonade stand, let alone a multi-trillion dollar company? We understand that's because these people aren't used to talking in front of cameras and crowds and audiences. They're hypersensitive to the fact that everything they say will be picked apart by millions of people around the world. Like, they understand now that Davos is not a clandestine meeting anymore. We have blasted it open by force, and now they recognize that they're under massive scrutiny, and so it's hard for them to talk freely. So guys that I'm sure in the boardroom are sitting there going, we're going to move $1 billion over here. We need to really, you know, focus and prioritize this aspect of the business, and let's not forget to put AI on the back burner while we do. I'm sure they're rapid fire, and then you put them in front of camera and they're like, AI is so we really got to focus on AI. And it's like, are these guys idiots? No, they're hiding what they want to say. Their brain is running a thousand miles a minute. But they know that if they were to actually genuinely express themselves in a forthright and uninhibited fashion, we'd all hate them and understand that they're evil. So they have to control themselves. So they seem very unimpressive. At the end of the day, these are, whether you like it or not, some of the smartest, most capable people in the world. You don't make it to Davos without having some incredible qualities. And so when you're having to explain to them, like, hey, maybe don't disintegrate the fundamental fabric of the nations that, you know, you're in charge of or have huge power up, they don't need to be explained this. Okay? And it's like explaining to an arsonist that fire burns things. They know. No, it's what they're doing. They're doing it on purpose, and they're perfectly aware of what they're doing. So part of it's just kind of silly that these very simple things are being explained, because these people know exactly what they're doing. I guess by explaining it to them, in a way, it's just going, we know what you're doing. And everybody who's not a retard understands as well. Let's go to clip number 12 here. Trump takes the stage saying it's great to be back to address such respected business people from around the world. Let's go to clip number 12 here. Trump at the World Economic Forum.
And these discussions would be incomplete without the President of the United States, the most important leader in the world. We appreciate him here. So let me introduce and welcome back to Davos the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
Now, people will point to this and say, see, Trump's in on it. He's one of them. No, this is him barnstorming. This is him kicking the door down and gate crashing their little elite of in. He did the same thing in his first administration, and he does the same thing here. Lets them know they're not in charge anymore. We are. That's what's happening here, and they can't keep him out. He's the president of the United States.
Thank you very much, Larry. It's great to be back in beautiful Davos, Switzerland, and to address so many respected business leaders, so many friends, few enemies, and all of the distinguished guests. It's a who's who, I will say that.
It's a who's who, some enemies. That gets a big laugh. So again, Trump really was on his A game here. We got a lot of clips from Trump. We'll just go through them. Let's go to clip number 11. This is Trump on Greenland. Again, has become a major, like, overwhelming, overbearing topic of conversation here at the World Economic Forum this year. Let's watch.
So we want a piece of ice for world protection, and they won't give it. We've never asked for anything else, and we could have kept that piece of land, and we didn't. So they have a choice. You can say yes, and we will be very appreciative, or you can say no, and we will remember.
So I said to my wife, yeah, sounds a little grab them by the ice shelf, I guess. We want a little piece of ice, and they won't even give it to us. I mean, but what he's doing here is going to the heart of the matter, and it's what we talked about yesterday with Mark Carney admitting that the New World Order has failed, and admitting that not only has the New World Order failed, it was always an illusion the entire time. And the entire time, the specter, the idea of international law and the international rules-based community was always a lie. It was always predicated on America being willingly submissive to Europe, because Europe never had an ability to make us do anything. It was always a matter of, well, the people that run America are in this with us, and they're going to help us to achieve our ends, which are not for the benefit of America or Europe or any country in Europe. It's for the benefit of the globe. And so while America allowed itself to be taken advantage of, allowed our wealth and our power and our prominence to be siphoned away and used for their agenda, they called it the rules-based international order. As soon as America said, yeah, we're actually going to do what's best for us and not what's best for other people, they admit, yeah, well, you probably should have been doing that the whole time. And you could have been doing that the whole time, and they had no ability to stop us from doing that the whole time. We chose not to, because we are ruled by traitors. Let's go to clip number 13 here. This is Trump calling out Europe for being utterly irrecognizable thanks to mass immigration. Let's watch.
Certain places in Europe are not even recognizable, frankly, anymore. They're not recognizable. And we can argue about it, but there's no argument. Friends come back from different places. I don't want to insult anybody and say I don't recognize it. And that's not in a positive way. That's in a very negative way. And I love Europe, and I want to see Europe go good. But it's not heading in the right direction.
It's absolutely right. It's not just not heading in the right direction. It is running as fast as it can towards an incinerator. Not that this was unnatural. Not that this was natural, rather. Not that this was unavoidable. That Europe has something intrinsic about it that is the engine to its downfall. No, these are choices being made by the richest, wealthiest, most advanced, most prosperous civilizations the world has ever seen. They decided that was bad. They decided they were bad for that, and they needed to be punished for how successful they were. And so we needed to shoot ourselves in the knee, and we wonder why Europe is collapsing. It's collapsing on purpose because they wanted it to collapse. Really not that complicated. Let's go to clip number 22 here. President Trump announces that prosecutions are about to commence. Let's watch.
Thousands of miles away, separated by a giant ocean. It's a war that should have never started, and it wouldn't have started if the 2020 U.S. presidential election weren't rigged. It was a rigged election. Everybody now knows that. They found out.
people will soon be prosecuted for what they did. It's probably breaking news, but it should be. It was a rigged election. Can't have rigged elections. You need strong borders, strong elections, and ideally a good press. I always say it. Strong borders, strong elections, free, fair elections, and a fair media. The media is terrible. It's very crooked. It's very biased, terrible. But someday it'll straighten out because it's losing all credibility. Think of it. When I went in a landslide, a giant landslide, won all seven swing states, won the popular vote, won everything, and I only get negative press. That means that it has no credibility. And if they're going to get credibility, they're going to have to be fair. So you need a fair press. But you also need those other elements. And I inherited a terrible, terrible situation. If you look, the border was open. The inflation was raging. Everything was bad with the United States when I came into office. But I also inherited a mess with Ukraine and Russia, something that would have never happened. And I know Putin very well. He and I would discuss Ukraine. It was the apple of his eye, but he wasn't going to do anything. I said, Vladimir, you're not doing it. He would never have done it. It was terrible what happened. I could see it happening, too. After I left, I could see it happening. Biden had given Ukraine.
And again, everybody could see it happening. Everybody knew that this was coming. But there, that's pretty breaking news right there. Trump says people will be prosecuted for their actions in 2020, stealing the election. It's probably breaking news, and it should be. Well, as soon as those prosecutions come down, it will be. Oh, boy, will we celebrate it. I love hearing it. I'm glad that's, I guess, where we're headed. But until we see the prosecutions and until they succeed, a whole lot of hot air as far as I'm concerned. But exciting, exciting hot air. Very exciting hot air, but hot air nonetheless. Let's go to clip number 25 here. As again, Trump just eviscerates the fundamental underlying reality that the World Economic Forum is trying to foist on everybody. Let's watch.
The situation in Minnesota reminds us that the West cannot mass import foreign cultures which have failed to ever build a successful society of their own. I mean, we're taking people from Somalia, and Somalia is a failed, it's not a nation. Got no government, got no police, got no military, got no nothing. And then we have this fake congressperson who they just reported is worth $30 million. You believe this? Ilhan Omar talking about the Constitution provides me. She comes from a country that's not a country. And she's telling us how to run America. Not going to get away with it much longer, let me tell you.
Yeah, she shouldn't. That was probably my favorite part of the speech, to be honest with you. Ilhan Omar, she comes from a place that's not even a country, and she's going to tell us how to run America. Yeah, no, she should be denaturalized and deported. Like, for the sake of our nation and its continuing existence, sort of a necessity. You know, no offense, Ilhan, you know, strictly business here, but you are sort of a parasite. Parasites have to be removed from the body for the health of the body. So since you love America so much, naturally you'll approve of our ridding ourselves of a disease that's destroying us, I'm sure. I'm sure, because she loves America so much. More on the other side. We'll get back into what's going on with the World Economic Forum. We've heard from the good guys, and we'll hear from the bad guys next. Stay with us.
RFK Jr. mixes something into his drink, people pay attention. Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water? Methylene blue. Mel Gibson also praised methylene blue on Joe Rogan recently.
This stuff works, man.
A stimulant stimulates cells themselves to turn the cell up. This turns the energy up. That's why there's no letdown. That's why you can take this and go to sleep, too. But you sleep better on it, in my experience.
No, I really like it. I'm going to have to get on this stuff.
Here, show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
Our methylene blue, medical grade, made in Florida, is incredible. Cleans out your mitochondria, clarity, focus, energy. You've seen the rave reviews of every guest we've had on. It's game changing.
I feel like, wow, there's power in coalescing all your thoughts.
Did you hear our last guest, what she said happened to her?
No. What?
She said brain fog just lifted.
That's what it feels like.
I feel lighter. It's really interesting. I almost like feel smarter.
This stuff kicked in and it like instantly I just felt like this weird meditative energy. I don't know how to explain it. I don't feel jittery. I just felt like instantly like I went from 5 hours of sleep like I got last night to like 10 hours. I don't know how to explain it. The stuff's new to me, but I like it. Methylene Blue works for me.
I just kind of feel like I'm sitting up straight more. I'm thinking more. The thoughts are coming in easier. I'm making decisions faster. And it really does. And it gives you clean energy.
When I'm talking, it seems like it's not really me talking. I can hear my talking and going, wow, you're...
I agree. It's almost like an out-of-body experience. It's like you're behind yourself.
That is what it feels like. But my brain's going really fast.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
Yeah! I feel more energetic. I feel more alive.
I found that within 30 minutes of taking it, I have improved focus, improved short-term memory, improved energy. But if I take it late in the day, it doesn't interfere with my ability to sleep, which is very rare for something like this. I get a tingly feeling in my fingertips. It's almost like it's improving my circulation.
I feel tingling fingers.
Methylene Blue radically increases glucose uptake in the brain.
Okay.
So it makes you better and more efficient at using your sugar. We all know the brain uses like 25% of the calories in the body or something crazy.
They've done studies that chess masters burn like 5,000 calories in a day in a tournament because they're so focused on directing energy to their mind as they're thinking so critically that it's like almost like an Olympic athlete.
Well, think about this stuff. It operates in a very similar way. That's the real thing Methylene Blue does. I really believe in this product. A lot of people have bought our Methylene Blue. Our Methylene Blue is incredible. I take it personally. But yeah, I mean, like, this is a solid product. Take this in the morning. A couple hours later, you'll experience the cognitive benefits of it.
I mean, it's so good. It's scary. It's just amazing. So yes, it really does work. It varies person to person, but it's amazing.
About 15 minutes ago, I took 10 drops of the Ultimate Methylene Blue. I must say that it does a damn good job.
99% of people that take it have between moderate to just insanely good effects. So good for your whole body.
Definitely noticed my focus, cognition increased, good energy right now. I'm a practicing dentist, so I have more patients to treat coming up. So I'm always looking for that afternoon boost without the slump.
With this, it's like in your head where you're like, you can feel it. Your body's a little tingly, but you're just more aware of what's going on.
I would definitely recommend the Alex Jones Methylene Blue here. It's great stuff. So thank you, Alex. Keep it coming.
Powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, folks. Again, Trump gave a very powerful speech to the World Economic Forum today in Davos, where he confirmed what they were saying. He confirmed, because they keep saying, yeah, we're losing power, the world has rejected globalism, and Trump and his associates are there to say, yep, no, that's true. You definitely have lost to us, and it's time that you act like it. Because they're still doing everything they absolutely can to continue all of the programs that we identified and rejected. They're now trying to reconfigure and continue. It was like DEI. We say, we don't like DEI. We don't like anything about it. You have to stop. And so I could show you 10 different videos of people at colleges and government buildings all going, well, we kept doing DEI, but we just call it equity office now. We just call it the togetherness office now, but it does all of the same stuff. That's basically what the World Economic Forum is doing on a global scale as we reject their climate change agenda and everything else. And we reject it on the face of it because they create the problems that they then pretend to solve. And we recognize that most of the problems that they're trying to pump up aren't even real issues, and then the solutions that they offer both won't solve anything that they're talking about and also creates a whole bunch of other problems. So yeah, on the face of it, like, we reject the climate change scam as a whole, but really we reject the underlying philosophy behind it. We reject the underlying ideology that informs it. We reject the anti-human agenda that it's covering, that it's a mask for. We reject the ultimate goal of all of these programs, which whether it's climate change or mass migration or whatever else they're talking about, they all have the same goal, which is to create a one world government ruling over a populace incapable of rebellion. And that's it. And that's the end of the, that's the end of their plans. No matter what they're talking about, what form it comes in, that's the ultimate goal and nothing else matters to them. Just reemphasize that over and over again, just so we understand what it is we're actually dealing with here. I want to go to this video. I mentioned it. James O'Keefe does it again. Stories at InfoWars.com. James O'Keefe infiltrates Davos. Elites discuss weather modification agenda. James O'Keefe, media journalist, wore a disguise and infiltrated the globalist World Economic Forum confab in Davos, Switzerland, where he heard secret discussions on carbon taxes, weather modification, and chemtrails, and spoke about artificial rain with a World Economic Forum elitist. I got to say, James O'Keefe not only continually, like regularly delivers unbelievable bombshell content that really the only downside of it is nothing's ever done about the things he discovers. I mean, he discovers fraud and rigged investigations. And I mean, stuff that in any normal system would result in like not just arrest and convictions, but entire industries being shut down, entire swaths of the government being tried for treason. None of that happens, and it's unfortunate, but James O'Keefe not only delivers consistent bombshell revelations, he's got to be having the most fun out of anybody. I mean, I love it, and you'll hear in the video we're about to play, it's got to be fun because he knows the language that they speak in, and he is able to pretend to be like one of them, and it's just awesome. It really, I'm like, I would, why aren't I doing this? I would love to, I'd love to go in with some of the globalists and start talking in their language and try to get them to think I'm one of them. It just, so not only is James O'Keefe killing it constantly, he's having the best time, and I love to see it. So let's go to clip number five here. This is James O'Keefe of the World Economic Forum convincing them to admit that they are manipulating the weather worldwide. Let's watch.
So we invest in these technologies to assist with the warming climate, yep, and the effect of sulfur dioxide in the atmosphere will help block some right of the warming, and the particles stay in the air for 1 year. Yep. So, and actually we're speaking to some of the airplane manufacturers and to see if they can emit some of our technology into the atmosphere to help with the global warming. That's right.
Fantastic.
Yeah, climate. I mean, we don't like to use the term climate engineering. It scares people, so we prefer.
Of course, but it's. But for me, being an engineer, I think that's actually what you do. It's
like, oh yes,
you can have financial engineering. You can have, I'm sure, climate engineering, can, because it involves something that's more scientific.
And, yes, exactly. You're an engineer. You understand. Yeah. And from Sweden, right?
Yeah.
So we don't like to call them chem trails. We don't like to use this.
So what do you call it instead?
Well, we call it aerosol injection. Aerosol. It's kind of like little droplets.
Okay.
And the droplets form in the air.
Okay.
And they stay there for a year.
Yeah.
It's modeled kind of a mini volcanic eruption, actually.
Yeah. And the aviation fuels have some sulfur in them. So
yeah.
It creates some sulfur dioxide emissions naturally. And that does have a cooling effect.
Now this guy, Kennedy Ritchie, who runs a company called 4Air, spoke on stage and he says on his website that he wants to, quote, decarbonize the aviation industry. He actually told me he was trying to eliminate contrails entirely, but then brought up cloud seeding.
A lot of the work actually came out of the military, so they do this all the time.
Have you worked with them at all?
No, because they're a little more closed door about their procedures.
You ever heard of sulfur dioxide?
Yeah.
You've heard of that? Okay.
Yeah. It's actually pretty cheap to do it. The ability to put sulfur dioxide up there is actually a pretty cheap way to cool down the earth.
Oh, yeah.
So an opportunity for, you know, one or two people to just do it is, you know, impressive. He went a little further. He's like, it'd be interesting if the government start doing this over each other's territories on purpose, like if we start getting to weather modification as a government, either good or bad.
Yeah.
The closest one I'm aware of one is someone called Airborne Snow Observatory. Mm-hmm. They do some more like weather, I don't want to say modification, but more like upper atmosphere weather monitoring is probably a better term.
Yeah. Now, according to the website, Airborne, this is what this guy Richie brings up, measures snow depth, Snow Water Equivalence provides highly accurate snowpack data, is a commercial spin-off of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory snow monitoring technology used to help water managers and scientists.
Earlier today in this room, Al Gore was in this room, Larry Fink was in this room, and now we're in the room talking to people about geoengineering, weather modification, and the trails that come behind airplanes. What's going on?
Let's say aluminum oxides in my lettuce. Are you kidding me?
Say that again?
Aluminum oxides. Aluminum oxides are part of the cocktail from the hill that they're spraying above our heads.
Oxides are part of the chemical cocktail they're spraying above our heads. Yeah, well, you know, you don't want your lettuce to have poison on it. Don't spray poison on everybody. That seems pretty simple. I think I found a solution for you. That's the way these people think, though. They're like, yeah, we're going to spray all this stuff in the air on everything, but I don't want it on my stuff. Not me, of course. Right? It's like the climate change pitch meeting I did. We're like, you know, we're going to reduce humans. I mean, not you and me, obviously. Like, we're more important than that. But, you know, everybody else, they need to be eliminated. That's how these people really feel. And it really is sick. They really do have, like, a God complex about them, where they really think they have the right to do anything to us. And I love that they can't get away with this unmolested anymore. I mean, they used to pretend the whole thing didn't exist. Even up until a couple years ago, the security was like way more intense than it ever would need to be. But it used to be like you were not allowed in the town if you weren't, you know, a member of the confab. And just by our persistent coverage of their events, we have really forced the door. We have really forced our way into this. And they aren't able to do what they used to do in total, total secrecy. Because remember, the media, mainstream media, agrees not to cover this. Like, they are participating in the meetings under the agreement that they will keep everything hidden, the Chatham House rules, as they call them. Can't write anything down. Can't quote anybody directly. You can vaguely reference what was discussed at these events, but you can't actually come out with any factual journalistic reporting about it. And the mainstream media is happy to oblige. The alternative media is shattering their whole little party. It's amazing and it's fun to see. But let's get into what they plan for us and how they plan to implement it. Let's go to clip number one here. This is Larry Fink, president of the World Economic Forum and BlackRock Industries. Let's go to clip number one. This is him talking about digital currencies, of course.
I think the movement towards tokenization, decimalization is necessary. It's ironic that we see two emerging countries leading the world in tokenization and digitization of their currency. That's Brazil and India. I think we need to move very rapidly to doing that. We would be reducing fees. We would do more democratization by reducing more fees if we had all investments on a tokenized platform that you can move from a tokenized money market fund to equities and bonds and back and forth. We have one common blockchain. We will, you know, we could reduce corruption. So I would argue that, yes, we have more dependencies on maybe one blockchain, which we could all talk about. But that being said, the activities are probably processed and more secure than ever.
So he's talking about a couple different things there. Obviously, the push is for CBDCs, central bank digital currencies, and that is sort of the overwhelming push. And putting this in context with what we've been talking about the rest of this week and the run-up to this, understand that their plans, their original plans failed. We defeated them. Now they're coming up with their new plans. And originally, it was climate change and it was, you know, migration and overpopulation and all these sorts of scams. That's what was defeated. So now they're sort of reduced down to the bare minimum. Like, what do they actually need to achieve so that they don't lose? What do they actually need to implement? They got all these things they want to implement. They're trying to reorganize entire populations and get us to eat bugs and get rid of farming and like, all these things are kind of periphery. Like, they all contribute to the same overall agenda, but they're in trouble right now. They're having to triage their agenda. They're having to determine, okay, what do we actually need to achieve and what can we sort of let fall to the side? They've determined their recipe for success is total AI surveillance, digital currency. These two things combined, and a lot of things are covered under this, right? When you have total surveillance, I'm talking of AI, I'm talking of messages before they're even sent. As we've seen, the UK is now forcing backdoors to get around encryption by actually reading your message before they're encrypted and sent to the receiver. So that's under the same umbrella framework as the AI surveillance grid. But AI surveillance, central bank digital currencies that can dictate what you can buy, when you can buy, programmable money. That's what they've decided they need. And of course, this, again, under that umbrella is biometric identification. And this is what they're talking about. So they've dropped sort of the periphery stuff, and they're trying to determine what are the core components of our grid that we have to establish so that the rest of it can come to fruition. And that's it. As well as AI. Let's go to clip number three here. This is Bill Gates announcing a partnership with OpenAI to integrate health into the AI control grid framework. Let's watch.
AI is entering into the health system, but not just into the health system. It's all the way down to the level of the patient. So the patient is able to talk in their local language and describe what's going on. And so in order to, you know, make this a reality, to see what works, what doesn't work, you know, we're thrilled that OpenAI and the Gates Foundation are committing an initiative called Horizon 1000, where we'll go into 1,000 primary healthcare clinics in Africa, and you have, you know, different systems that we have to connect into. Although not this initiative, there's obviously a lot going on in India as well. And so, you know, over the next couple of years, I would expect developing world health may even get ahead of rich world because the need is so great and the governments are embracing this and making sure that it's moving at full speed.
What he means is moving at full speed is the integration of the healthcare system into the AI control grid. All that other stuff about Africa and India, that's where they'll be doing the testing of it because they don't have protections against stuff like this like we do in the West. So once they normalize it there, they'll bring it here once they work out all the kinks, I guess. But of course, we've been covering this for a couple years. It accelerated during 2020, but Amazon and Google have been systematically buying up healthcare files. Like it, I remember doing a long report on this. It's called like Operation, it's not Operation Mockingbird, but it's named after a bird. I'm totally blanking on it. But it's a program that Google and Amazon are running. It's named after a bird, the swallow program, where they gobble up all the healthcare information. Basically, they got agreements from insurance companies and hospitals that they would just store all of their information on the cloud and therefore give access to Amazon and Google to, you know, do research or have access to that information, including your private healthcare. Again, this is always promoted as if it was helping people. It never was. And of course, it was laying the groundwork for the ultimate AI panopticon control grid that we've heard the people building it, like Larry Ellison, tell us what you need is all of the data about health, about money, about what you watch on TV, about your purchasing, everything in one place. Once that's achieved, once they have a centralized database of everything on the planet, then their control will be complete and they can program the human race like a computer. That's what they're going for. That's what they want. That's their ultimate goal. Because then they can determine, you know, then again, revolution will be impossible. If you can't even express revolutionary ideas, if you can't even understand revolutionary ideas, if you can't even conceive of a world in which, you know, revolution would be necessary, like they are really going for broke here and trying to create a permanent situation because they also think that they're on the cusp of being able to live forever and they're trying to create the world in which an individual can be, you know, technically immortal, not age, you know, not dying by age. Because of age, and that is incompatible with the world as it exists right now. The world as it exists requires death. Otherwise, infinite growth, you know, it's just not possible. You can't have everybody have infinite life. You can't have everybody on Earth living for 200, 300 years. Because they're going to have kids, and then those kids are going to live 200, 300 years. That's not feasible anyway. No, what you need is a very small number of people that will be given, granted access to the life extension technology. And they will rule over everybody as immortal god kings, holding the promise of immortality over everybody else. That if you just behave well enough or serve us well enough, perhaps you too can be welcomed into our ranks and allowed to live as immortals. It's the promise of the snake in the Garden of Eden combined with the mark of the beast in Revelations. It really is bringing it full circle, and that's what's motivating a lot of these guys and what they're doing. What they're doing, what they're saying, and the things they're trying to establish, and the rapidity with which they're desperate to get this stuff in place, because they're all absolutely terrified of death because they're all spiritual blanks. Let's go to clip number 26 here. This is Bill Gates again, looking troubled as he talks about needing more money. Let's watch.
Bill, what the funding? Is it governments pulling back? What is going on in that environment?
Yeah, almost the top givers to global health have all reduced the amount they give. And so, you know, Gavi raised, which does fundraising every 5 years. They were in Brussels in June for the replenishment hosted by us and Ursula von der Leyen. And we raised, we were down over 20%. Global Fund, actually, we were worried it would be even worse. And so things went better than we expected, but it's still less money. And so the Global Fund board sits there and says, okay, how much do we cut TB versus malaria versus HIV? And that's, you know, the situation we find ourselves in. And, you know, this has real impact. From 2000 to 2024, we had record reductions in childhood death, much faster than ever in history. In 2025, for the first time, more children died than the year before, 4.8 million versus 4.6 million. And, you know, that's because donors cut money. And some of them cut in a very abrupt, unexpected way that really disrupted things like getting malaria chemo prophylaxis out, getting bed nets out. And so we're dependent on these donors.
Yeah, good. Maybe the donors don't want to participate in your evil schemes. Good for them. They shouldn't be participating in them in the first place. Crew found what I was talking about, by the way, Project Nightingale. That's a bird, right? Project Nightingale is what it was called. Look that up from a couple years ago. Data storage and processing project by Google Cloud and Ascension, a Catholic healthcare system comprising a change of 2,600 hospitals, doctor's offices, and other related facilities in 21 states with tens of millions of patient records available for processing healthcare data. Ascension is one of the largest healthcare systems in the United States with comprehensive and specific healthcare information of millions who are part of its system. The project is Google's attempt to gain a foothold into the healthcare industry on a large scale. Amazon, Microsoft, Apple Inc. are also actively advancing into healthcare, but none of the business arrangements are equal in scope to Project Nightingale. And that really is just a start. But if you want to find out some of the ways in which our healthcare information is being fed into giant AI databases for globalist programming, Project Nightingale is a good place to start. 2019, I remember covering it at InfoWars then. Amazon has a similar program that I think is actually more successful and is cooperating with, I believe they're actually in bed with the government doing it, but certainly some of the bigger insurance companies. So yeah, it's all contributing to the same agenda. It's all like they're all working towards the same ends, and they're the same ends that we've been telling you about since, you know, Project Nightingale in 2019, when we told you, here's what's happening. They're going to get all this healthcare data. They're going to combine it into databases so they can use it to control the people. It's always been obvious. It's just, we have to stop them. Yeah, Google drops Amazon's One Medical. Anyway, they're in on it together. Let's go to clip 34 here, just since we're talking about the EU, talking about the CBDCs, rather. And the EU is, in a very real way, planning and setting the groundwork for their rollout of the central bank digital currency, which will coincide with the collapse of the dollar as a global reserve currency. If the globalists in power or the globalists who designed this system had their way, this would all come as the result of some sort of devastating World War III event, but they may do it even without the cataclysm. Let's go to clip number 34 here.
We here in Europe, we live in a democracy, right? Well, think again. For instance, here in the Netherlands, even though the entire parliament voted against participating in the CBDC, the central bank digital currency, the minister Van Huffelen, this clown over here, went to the EU in Brussels and signed the agreement single-handedly, ignoring the will of both the parliament and the people. Why? Because she thinks it's important, and in her words, her opinion also counts. Also, the European Union put out a survey asking all European citizens what they think about the introduction of the CBDC. The responses were overwhelmingly negative. Everyone said, don't do it. So what do you think the EU did? Exactly. They ignored the will of the people. And in the fourth quarter of this year, the first version of the CBDC will be released. And then in the second quarter of next year, the Dutch NLID wallet will be launched. And this is where all your money will exist. And it will be fully programmable. That means they can control what you spend your money on. For example, they could restrict you to buying only two clothing items per month. In the name of fighting climate change, of course. Or they could require you to spend your savings before a certain date, otherwise your saving would vanish, just to stimulate the economy. At that point, we have no financial freedom left, even though nobody wanted this, the people didn't want it, and the parliament voted against it, it's still happening. Is this a democracy or not? Let me know in the comments what you think.
That's a very good video, and he's exactly right, of course. And when you really think about what that means when they're talking about programmable money, it means no savings. It means no intergenerational wealth. It means no saving up for a big purchase, right? No big down payment and then buying a house and having that as a store of money where you pay it off monthly. At the end of it, you have this, you know, asset that you can sell. No, just everything is impermanent. Nothing is saved. Legally, nothing can be saved. Everything that you purchase also is not something that you will hold on to and pass on to your children. Everything will be impermanent. It is literally the brave new world construct that they're imposing on us. We don't want it, but they're not asking us if we want it. So I guess we have to stop them.
If you ask Grok, or if you ask a sports nutritionist, or if you ask the nutritionists on the Olympic teams, they will tell you that creatine is absolutely a must. TheAlexShowStore.com already has the very best creatine you can get on the market. Now we're introducing this, and I am extremely excited. Let me introduce you to this bad boy that comes in two delicious flavors. That is the recommended daily allowance of the highest quality type of creatine. Right there, concentrated, the very best. We get it from the top lab in the country, the highest rated. 5 milligrams of this a day. Most people think creatine is just about better muscle, healthier, more stamina. It's been proven. It's been documented. I'll show you what Grok had to say about it here in just a moment. But the first thing you need to understand is that it's not just making your muscles better or your body be able to do more exercise. It's doing all these incredible things for your brain and everything else. And that's really more and more what scientists are saying people should focus on with creatine. And just since I've been taking creatine for the last few months, it has had dramatic effects on my clarity, my focus, my energy, especially when used with ultramethylene blue. Again, everybody knows about muscle and performance, or most people do, but what are the other benefits? Grok says secondary emerging benefits, improves anaerobic capacity and power output, may increase glycogen storage in muscles when combined with carbs. Potential brain benefits, improves cognitive performance under sleep deprivation or mental fatigue, possible neuroprotective effects being studied in traumatic brain injury, Parkinson's, depression, etc. May benefit vegetarians and others who have a lower level of creatine in their diet. Who benefits the most? Older adults, strength and power, people with low dietary creatine. It goes on and on. Bottom line, if you're not taking creatine, you're crazy, and we've got the best.
did some reconnaissance on the ground, speaking to an organization there that's gearing up to for resistance and protest. I can't tell you exactly what they're doing, but it's called Operation Pull Up. Tell us why you're doing this.
This is Operation Pull Up, more of a clandestine operation. We show up somewhere that is a key location. They don't expect us to come there. And then we disrupt business as usual.
The 1994 Clinton-era FACE Act, meant to shield abortion mills from verifiable threats, got weaponized overnight when a pack of anti-ICE radicals egged on and live-streamed by CNN has-been Don Lemon.
This is the beginning of what's going to happen here. When you violate people's due process, when you pull people off the street, you start dragging them and hurting them and not abiding by the Constitution, when you start doing all of that, people get upset and angry. Remember what the civil rights movement was about.
As you can see, all these pretend Christians, all these comfortable white people who are living lavish, comfortable lives while children are dragged into concentration camps.
These clowns barged in mid-service, falsely claiming some pastor doubled as an ICE honcho, scaring kids to tears, emptying pews, and forcing the whole congregation to scatter in distress.
Renee Good!
All while Lemon played director, camera rolling, smugly defending the chaos as First Amendment theater and whining that disruption is just what protesting is about.
Watch this guy here, look, hugging his kid. And, you know, I've imagined it's uncomfortable and traumatic for the people here, but that's what protesting is about. And so you heard what some of the folks said in there. You know, that this is, they shouldn't be there and, you know, they shouldn't be uncomfortable and this is our house and whatever. That's what protesting is about, is to make people uncomfortable. You may not like it.
It's called journalism. First Amendment, all that stuff. For all of you people who believe in the First Amendment, absolutist. There you go. So why don't you talk to the actual person who is in charge of the organization and whose idea it was to have the protest at the church before you start blaming me for stuff for which you have no idea.
How would you feel if I went to your house and I started yelling?
Depends on what I did, but not in my house. That's a whole different thing. I think these people would go inside of anybody's house.
This is the house of God.
But Don, how is it that you defend yourself with First Amendment protections while simultaneously prohibiting the free exercise thereof of an establishment of religion, a violation of the very same amendment?
What do you think of it?
I mean, this is unacceptable. It's shameful. It's shameful to interrupt a public gathering of Christians in worship. So.
But there are folks who will say,
I have to take care of my flock.
Okay,
my family.
Listen, we live in a constitution in the First Amendment to freedom of speech and freedom to assemble and protest.
Yeah. We're here to worship. We're here to worship Jesus because that's the hope of these cities. That's the hope of the world is Jesus Christ.
I want to be very respectful. Please don't push me though.
We're here to worship Jesus. Yes. That's why we're here.
The FACE Act explicitly bans using force, threats, or physical obstruction to intimidate or interfere with people exercising their religious freedom at a place of worship, an act the Biden administration used to prosecute at least 25 FACE Act cases involving roughly 60 defendants. These cases accounted for roughly 24% of all FACE Act prosecutions in the law's 30-year history up to that point.
Take, for example, one of our witnesses here today, Paul Vaughn, who was prosecuted for praying outside of an abortion clinic. Vaughn was arrested when an FBI SWAT team raided his home at gunpoint early in the morning in front of his wife and 11 children, later sentencing him to 6 months of home confinement and 3 years of probation. Another FACE Act defendant, Lauren Handy, was sentenced to 57 months in prison for her role in protesting late-term abortion within our nation's capital. And I would note, this happens to be an individual that I don't always align with philosophically. In another grotesque prosecution, the weaponized Biden-Harris Justice Department recently sentenced a 75-year-old grandmother, Paulette Harlow, to a 24-month federal prison sentence. And again, in the case of Eva Idol, an 89-year-old, I repeat, 89-year-old death camp survivor who is awaiting federal sentencing for...
Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
Dismantling the globalist agenda hour by hour. The War Room with Harrison Smith is live right now on X and Band.video worldwide.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Second hour of the War Room is on, and I'm joined in studio by the raw egg nationalist, Dr. Charles Cornish Dale. You can find him on X at BabyGravy9, rawegnationalist.com. I love that every time you're on and I read your username out, you laugh. It's a great name, BabyGravy9 on X. Although when I was trying to tag you today, it took me a second because I'm typing raw egg national. What is Baby Gravy 9 on X, folks? You got to follow him. He's an Oxford and Cambridge educated historian and anthropologist who rose to prominence writing under that pseudonym Raw Egg Nationalist. Of course, he's a writer for InfoWars, and his latest book published by Skyhorse is called The Last Men, Liberalism and the Death of Masculinity. There it is. And it's funny, I totally didn't make the connection that that's your name, because I have your other book, the Egg Benedict option, where you're just credited as Raw Egg Nationalist. So I saw this book, and I thought, oh, he wrote a book with some doctor and got a byline. But you're the doctor, Charles Cornishdale. Very good to know. Welcome to the show, sir.
It's fantastic to be here, Harrison. Really is.
Well, I think your book is very pertinent to everything going on right now. Because we talk about the psyops going on and the financial manipulation, I try to remind the audience there's an underlying chemical element to this, that one of the reasons that we're not seeing men stand up against tyranny is they are physically weaker, physically incapable of doing what previous generations were, and a lot of that has to do with testosterone. Talk a little bit about that, the underlying physicality, the chemical attack that the world is under.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a real pleasure and a privilege to be here. I filled in for Alex on the fourth hour of the show, and Alex has done a huge, huge amount to raise awareness, actually, of the biological war that is being waged on modern men and on women too. But it's been underappreciated. You can talk about the politics, you can talk about left versus right, you can talk about liberty and tyranny and whatever, but actually, there's another kind of war, a silent war that's going on, beneath the surface, endocrine disrupting chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, birth control, the additives that are in processed food, they're all having this huge effect, huge biological effect on our vitality, on our resilience, on our hormone levels in particular. And that's what the book is about. The book is about the civilizational decline in testosterone levels that's been taking place for decades. And not just the physical results of that, but also the political too, because it does have political implications. So I was on with Brianna Morello this morning, and we were talking about what it actually means to have a full society of men who are, or maybe not a full, but approaching a kind of full society, where men have low testosterone. What does that actually mean politically? It means a lot of things. It means, among other things, that men are easier to govern, less likely to resist, they're less patriotic, they don't think the way and feel the way that men should feel, that men have been programmed to feel by hundreds of thousands, millions of years of evolution. I mean, testosterone is the master male hormone, it's essential to proper male health, but it also has political implications, it also has political functions. You can give a man a dose of testosterone and he will become happier with inequality. He'll become happier with hierarchy. I mean, there are actual studies that show this.
Right. He'll become more honest.
Exactly, yeah. A man administered a dose of testosterone gel is more likely to stand up and assert a minority viewpoint against the majority than the man who receives the placebo.
Right.
I mean, that's huge. Right?
That is.
That's huge.
Yeah, and the political implications are sort of unimaginable. I mean, when you really start thinking about what we're talking about here, it's almost impossible to quantify. I guess the question is, chicken or the egg? Are we liberal because we have less testosterone, or do we have less testosterone because of the liberal programming?
I think it's a combination. I think it's actually
a feedback loop, really.
It's a feedback loop. It's a vicious circle. So the book is about biology. The book is about this biological assault that's taking place, that's, you know, processed foods, sedentary lifestyles, exposure to endocrine disrupting chemicals, glyphosate, atrazine, whatever. But it's also about the nature of the political system itself. So I asked some quite unnerving questions, actually, about the nature of liberal democracy and whether liberal democracy basically is a low testosterone political system.
Right.
And I'm not really the first person to, well, I'm the first person really to frame the question in that way, but actually thinkers like Francis Fukuyama, who is one of the main influences, Nietzsche too, have, you know, said some quite suggestive things about the role of, Fukuyama frames it in terms of thymos, which is an ancient Greek term for man's desire to assert himself, basically.
Right.
His kind of vigorousness, spiritedness, if you will. And he basically says, actually, you know, liberal democracy, the triumph of liberal democracy is a victory over a certain kind of thymos. You know, men can't be men in particular ways within a liberal democratic system. Well, actually, you know, thymos is a good proxy for testosterone. All of the kind of behaviors that we associate with thymos, assertiveness, motivation, patriotism, a willingness to fight, etc., those kinds of things, that's a proxy for testosterone. So, you know, like you're in a low testosterone political system, which doesn't allow men to assert themselves in particular ways. And then also you've got this biological assault that's taking place as well. So you're undermining masculinity from multiple directions at once. And it is having a really vicious effect. But it's something actually, you know, that like this crisis of masculinity literature, Jordan B. Peterson, for example, you know, his whole career as a public intellectual was built off telling young men to clean their rooms.
Right.
None of these people talk about it. It's interesting, actually. You know, you can pick up a book, Richard Reeves, he wrote a book about masculinity, the name escapes me. You go to the index and look up testosterone and there's basically
it's
nothing.
Not there.
There's like one reference, and that's it, you know, but it's key. It's absolutely
right.
Key, this biological process, that's this biological decline that's happening.
Yeah, you're missing an essential element of what's going on. Again, and, you know, when you really think about what the implications are of this and, like, how this might impact you on a day-to-day basis, again, we have no idea. And really, it's like a dampening of our vitality across the board. And one of the things I remember seeing, lower testosterone makes you less likely to go with your gut.
Yes.
And that's just sort of the vernacular that we use. What that means is your brain is taking in all of these symbols you're unconsciously processing. And you're sort of just delivered a conclusion that you didn't logically, you know, figure out. It just is delivered to you. But that's just a pure, you know, unfiltered, unprocessed, absorption of reality. So when you say, you know, lower testosterone means you're less likely to go with your gut, really that means you're being cut off from like this immediacy to reality and an ability to even see and comprehend reality. It's like we're having our glasses taken off and the world around us is fuzzy. There's something very profound about that, I think.
Well, look, I mean, sometimes our instincts can be wrong. We can be mistaken in our instinctual responses to a particular situation. But instincts, stereotypes, prevail for a reason. They endure for a reason because actually for hundreds of thousands of years since we've been modern humans and millions of years, our ancestors, our primate ancestors, you know, these instincts have driven us to survive. You know, they are a survival mechanism and you need them. It is a survival mechanism, but yes, I mean, having low testosterone, you're less likely to go with your gut. That might be good in some situations, but it might also be actually catastrophic in others. It might be catastrophic in a situation where actually, you know, maybe like the coronavirus pandemic, for example, you know,
right.
like the, you don't know the science, you don't know about, you know, mRNA vaccines, but nevertheless, you can feel something is very wrong.
Right.
The government is doing something unheralded. Something's very wrong. They're not telling us, you know. A man with high testosterone might be more inclined to resist that. And it was very noticeable during the pandemic that, in fact, gym bros were one of the principal constituencies that just resisted on principle and said, look, no, you're not closing my gym. You're not preventing me from exercising. You're not preventing me from fortifying my body, because actually that's what you need. You need to be strong. You don't make people strong. You don't protect people by making them weak and keeping them inside. You strengthen their body. You know, you build your natural defenses. So yeah, I mean, it's we don't fully understand everything about testosterone, but I think what we do understand actually should be telling us to take this civilizational decline much more seriously than we have been. And so that's my main hope, really, with the book, is that actually, look, I can restore the biological aspect to the discussion and say, look, okay, yeah, you've talked about what it's like to work in a corporation with an HR section that's totally run by, you know, like fat liberal women with pink hair. And right. I mean, yeah, that's part of the crisis, you know, like it's the feminization of the workplace and all these other things. But actually, there's something else going on as
that's
well.
That's like a symptom.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's symptom and cause. I mean, all of these things are interacting in kind of interesting ways and like we said, becoming a sort of vicious cycle. But actually, we're just not talking about the biological causes.
Right. Well, it's a negative feedback loop, but it's encouraged. I mean, you know, it's gone from sort of this, you know, maybe people didn't notice it, but testosterone was sort of on the decline anyway, just because of the natural consequences of the way our food is prepared and all of that stuff. But then something happened, you know, about 10 years ago with the transgenderism and the, you know, feminism going absolutely crazy, where they then decided, okay, we actually have to target men, target masculinity, deliberately destroy it. And that's a whole other level of evil. And of course, a feedback loop that was already in process is only having the gas slammed on it and you know, going to go that much faster.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I often say, and it might seem a bit glib to some people, is that, look, if all of these industrial chemicals, all of these toxic substances that we're exposed to on a daily basis were increasing testosterone levels and making men more masculine, more vigorous, more likely to stand up for themselves, more assertive, etc., more patriotic, you can bet that the governments of the world would have brought in
100%.
The most stringent regulations
and
cleaned up the environment, you know, clean as a whistle, no more chemicals being released into the water, into the food supply, etc. But because these chemicals actually make us more compliant, they make us more dependent and docile, nothing's really done about it. And it's something that can easily be dismissed as a conspiracy theory, as the gay frogs, famously the gay frogs conspiracy theory was 10 years ago.
Yeah. And it was, of course, absolutely true. And all of this, again, is almost just like emblematic of what we're dealing with in a wider, like, geopolitical sphere, right? The idea of, you know, they want people to be weak. They want people to be, sad and pathetic and demoralized, because that makes people easier to control, that if it's something that makes you stronger, they're going to get rid of it. I mean, it's all like almost symbolic. How we treat our bodies and the effects of our bodies is exactly the same thing that happens on a political level. And so when you see, like, one of the most upsetting things about the modern world is seeing these utterly unimpressive, weak nerds running the world. I mean, you watch World Economic Forum, you're like, these guys, I mean, you watch Keir Starmer try to hammer a nail or something, or throw a punch, and it's the most pathetic thing you've ever seen. And our world was built by guys who, you know, in Rome, you weren't going to get a position unless you had survived at least one sword fight. I mean, we are missing something very tangible and real from the like mindset of the people ruling over us. That, again, is it a cause or an effect? It's something at the heart of this issue, is that we're being ruled by these weak men.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's always a funny thing, isn't it, to look at the health ministers of various different nations. And, well, I mean, and also, you know, Lloyd Austin, the secretary of Secretary of Defense. You know, there's that famous series of pictures of him during the coronavirus pandemic, you know, inspecting the troops
with a mask and
a visor, and then now what have you got? You've got Pete Hegseth,
yeah.
who is doing PT with, I mean, was a soldier himself. I mean, yeah. That's what it means to lead by example. I mean, a lot of liberals don't understand actually just how important that is, and they don't get why Pete Hegseth is so popular with the troops. Well, it's because actually he goes out early morning and does PT with them. He does log carries, you know, he does a run with them. He does push-ups. And the same with JD Vance, you know, I mean, it's like that's actually what leadership looked like for the entire span of human history until, 50 years ago, 70 right. years ago, maybe even less than that. And it does have a biological component. It is a biological thing, you know. I mean, the original aristocracies were all war aristocracies, you know. I mean, the best example of this, of course, is the Norman Conquest, right? You know, William the Conqueror beats the Anglo-Saxons and replaces wholesale the Anglo-Saxon nobility of England with Normans he's brought over and who fought with him at the Battle of Hastings.
Right, I mean, and it wasn't because they had the best ideas.
No, it wasn't. It was because they were better at swinging axes into other men's heads than the Saxons were.
And turns out if you're better at that, your ideas win at the end. Your ideas get imposed if yeah. you're just the better fighter. And because there's something just real about that. There's something undeniable about it. And, you know, we always talk about there's a very interesting, you know, overlap between martial arts, you know, fighting sports and right-wing politics, because theory falls apart when you're in the ring, right? You can have all the, you know, convoluted ideas you want, and liberalism is entirely propped up by these convoluted, highfalutin academic ideas that don't bear any weight in reality. That all falls apart when you get punched in the face. And, you know, similar thing I think is happening with the ICE protests, where you have these women going out and like getting in the faces of these like 6.5 foot tall men, and but they think that they're in a game where they can't get hurt, and they are the tough ones. They're the strong ones because they're on the right side of history. And it's like, it's just this delusion that's totally disconnected. So physical strength, there's just something real and undeniable about it, that maybe it's that reality that, you know, the left just fears and hates and wants to run away from.
Yeah. Well, it was very sad actually, you know, watching the aftermath of the shooting of Renee Good and hearing her wife or husband saying, I thought you didn't have real bullets. She right. actually said that.
Why do you have real bullets?
Why do you have real bullets? And it's like, well, yeah, because this isn't a game.
Right.
And actually, you know, like, you've been watching your Marvel films and playing your girl boss video games and, you know, thinking that you can just, you know, like defeat the evil empire, defeat the evil Nazis, like you might in a game, or you might see on the, and it's not like that. Like, right. It's not like that. I mean, if you're genuinely going to pose a threat to a law enforcement officer, what's going to happen? I mean, they're going to protect themselves, and they have every right to. And that's been the norm in every single society up until ours. And it was the norm here until not that long ago. But now suddenly the rules of the game have been changed, or at least these people think rules have been changed, and they can behave like that with impunity. I mean, you can't try to run a police officer or law enforcement agent over.
It was a real car, and yeah. he's going to use real bullets. I mean, yeah. that's, yeah.
I mean, the notion that a 4,500-pound SUV isn't a weapon is just insane, but people were saying it, and,
yeah.
and you know, people were, Jacob Frey was saying, you know, like, oh, he walked away afterwards. Well, yeah, I mean, he did walk away because he was quick enough on the draw that actually he could fire, and he shot her, and so she's spinning the wheel away, but actually she could have hit him straight on and run him over.
Yeah. And it's about this imposition where you've got these guys that could easily take out all of the people opposing them, but there's this we just live in this like imaginary world where these incredibly weak and unimpressive people are somehow getting the better of these very strong and impressive guys. It can't last that long. You can't prop up something fake forever, right? It eventually collapses into reality.
Yeah. Well, Sigmund Freud called it the return of the repressed.
Mm.
He was talking about psychological phenomena, but it is a psychological phenomenon, but it's also a physical and a social phenomenon. But yes, it does return. I mean, you can try and sit on reality for as long as possible and keep it down, but it has this horrible habit of reasserting itself because it's real, because it's the actual nature of the world.
And then again, to connect, because I just can't help but, you know, draw these connections between what we're talking about and then the World Economic Forum. And one of the big things of the World Economic Forum is you had Mark Carney basically admitting, yeah, you know, the rules-based international order was never real because we never had ability to stop a strong state from ignoring us. Yeah. And there's something about that I feel like connects to ICE, where it's like we're voluntarily participating in this submissive activity. We don't have to. America never had to be subject to European courts, but for the sake of the world, we decided to. But it feels like that illusion is falling, and we're just like, why are we doing this? Why are we playing this game with these weaker people to where we can pretend that they're in charge? And it's like, enough of this. We're in charge. We need to assert that. So I see a connection between all of this.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. I mean, the rules-based international order is a legal fiction.
Right.
It's a legal fiction that emerged in the aftermath of World War II. But it was always a fiction, and in many respects, you know, it was America voluntarily tying its hands behind its back. And, you know, I mean, civilization in certain respects obviously does depend on people relinquishing violence as the go-to option for everything. You know, like, you can't have a civilized society if the recourse in any situation is just for the stronger person to smack the weaker person on the head with a club. But what you can't do is you can't eliminate violence as an option. I mean, there's that great quote from Starship Troopers, isn't there, about, you know, the basis of all morality is violence, or the basis of all order is violence. And it's, and we don't need to talk about whether Starship Troopers is a satire or not.
We could.
Rehashing that every 5 minutes on Twitter. But, you know, like, it's true. I mean, it's actually true. And I think, you know, Americans feel, and Donald Trump certainly feels, you know, that actually, okay, well, we've tied our hands behind our backs and we haven't actually benefited from doing that. And so maybe let's untie our hands and maybe let's actually, you know, go and get what we want, because the country has been deliberately collapsed, or at least they've tried to collapse it and, you know, got quite far along that road. And so actually, no, I mean, we're not going to go along with measures that actually, harm America simply for the sake of maintaining this fiction that we live in a rules-based international order when we don't, because other countries don't obey.
And again, it's like the same thing's happening on the international level is happening on the national level, where, you know, if a family member of mine was injured by somebody, I don't have to wait for the court to take care of it. I'm capable of wielding my own justice, but you suppress that and you participate because you understand that if everybody were to act impulsively like that, it wouldn't be a civilization. But I have to know that I am going to get justice at the end of the day. That by not fulfilling my desire to go out and get justice myself, the society that we built will provide it for me. But that's going away too now. And people are, I mean, you've got the racial aspect of juries. You've got juries, you know, being forced to admit, yeah, that guy was guilty, but we didn't want him to be guilty because he's black and we're black, or whether it's just not charging people who commit crimes. I mean, people are losing faith in the justice system and are going to start taking things into their own hands. And that's when everything collapses. I mean, talk about a feedback loop. Once that gets going, there's really no stopping it. We're going to go to a quick commercial break here in just a second, then we'll be back on the other side with Dr. Charles Cornish Dale, known better as Raw Egg Nationalist. You can follow him on X at BabyGravy9, RawEggNationalist.com. His new book is titled The Last Men, Liberalism and the Death of Masculinity, and it's available. Is it available now?
It is.
It is available now from Skyhorse Publishing, The Last Men, Liberalism and the Death of Masculinity by Dr. Charles Cornish Dale. We'll be back on the other side with more. He's going to sit with us through the whole show, so we'll take your calls in the next hour. But back with more on the other side.
I want to thank the viewers and listeners for your endless and tireless support over the years. We try to make it easy to be supporters with fabulous products that really enrich and empower your life. A wide selection of Patriot apparel, ball caps, t-shirts, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. All sorts of really cool knives, collectibles, and the most important, the best supplements you're going to find anywhere. Whatever the highest rated is, whatever has the best studies, whatever has the 5-star reviews. I mean, if you don't get our ultramethylene blue, if you don't get our bovine colostrum that's the very best. If you don't get our Shilajit or our sea moss, you're crazy. If you don't get our turmeric that's the strongest out there, anti-cancer, anti-inflammatory, so good for you, you're crazy. Big sales going on the site, 40% off on things like the World War II modern version trench knife, limited edition InfoWars black on white trucker hat, free with every order. And they had this thing going since Thursday. I didn't notice it until Sunday, so I have extended one day today. But that's it. Every order gets one of these, limited edition, in there. So get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com. But with the deals we got, we need to sell a lot of stuff to fund this operation. So do yourself a favor, Mr. Sit on the Fency. I'm not mad at you. I'm telling you. Get the methylene blue. We have the best. It is so good for you. It is so game-changing. So good for your mind. So good for all your cells. So good for telomeres. Just get a bottle of ultramethylene blue. Support the broadcast. Finally, because we got even more documents in and more depositions and things, we are about to file our huge, massive civil rights suit with conspiracy against rights, all the proof, the DOJ, the CIA, the Democratic Party, you know, the law firms. I mean, this is a... And by the way, under the rules, we had to show them the suit a few weeks ago. And they went completely ape and threatened us and everything else with, you know, all this stuff they're going to do. Great. Because we got all the evidence up one side and down the other. But I'm taking on the big boys. So know this. The majority of the funding you send us buying products goes to the fight against the tyrants. And we are fully committed to that. They want this show off the air because I know what I'm talking about. That's why I get mad at the shows that are, you know, innuendo and conspiracy theories. I've never been a conspiracy theorist, folks. That's what the media calls me. That's a CIA term. I am an analyst. I'm a futurist. And I know what I'm talking about. And my guests know what they're talking about. You know my rule. Who do I have on all the time? People that are consistently right. I associate with people that got their acts together. And I can tell you, we know what we're doing. This broadcast belongs to you. You built this. It's fighting for your future, my future, all of us collectively. But we can't do it without you. Make the commitment in this ocean of media information. The bad guys particularly hate this show because we know what we're doing. We're steering people right. But we can't take these people on without you. I need your support. Word of mouth, prayer, and financial support. And I make it damn easy. This is a win-win. All you got to do is go to thealexjonesstore.com. I'm an influencer, by the way. I'm a patriot and a journalist and a pundit and an analyst and a futurist and a father and a guy that loves God. Influencer comes from the time of Plato and Aristotle and Socrates. And influencers are people that use rhetoric without facts and reality and logic to convince dumb people. So when the globalists call you all influencers and you go, yeah, I'm an influencer, it just shows how stupid you are. Stop calling yourselves influencers. I'm a philosopher. I'm a warrior. I'm a game changer. I'm a historian. I'm a fighter. I'm a pioneer. I'm an explorer. I got red blood. It's pumping through my big heart fast. I like life and freedom and justice. I like women. I like red meat. I like guns. I like sunsets and puppy dogs. And ladies of the night, to quote Waylon Jennings.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, Infowars.com, band.video. Please do support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. We got a lot of great supplements there. We got the new, we need to, you know, you always send us home with your books and your magazines and everything. We need to send you home with some tallow, with some of the colostrum, bovine colostrum.
Oh, amazing.
Plus. What's your take on tallow?
Tallow is great. You know, I do have sensitive skin, and I find that there's nothing better than the tallow. Tallow is,
there you go.
Tallow's the best. It's good for your lips. It's good for any part of your body and your skin.
Well, we've got the best. We've got the best at thealexjonesstore.com. We'll have to send you home with some of the high quality, bovine colostrum plus or the tallow or maybe one of these big knives, but you might get arrested for having this knife. Maybe we don't send you back to the UK with a giant, dagger. You can play with them while you're here. Go to thealexjonesstore.com to support us. I hope that you do. My guest sitting in studio with me is Raw Egg Nationalist, Dr. Charles Cornish Dale. His new book is called The Last Men, Liberalism and the Death of Masculinity. You can find it at raweggnationalist.com. There it is. Fantastic stuff. And obviously the World Economic Forum is going on right now. Have you been able to follow it at all? What's your take on this year's festivities?
Well, I mean, it's just hard to ignore Trump, isn't it? I mean, he's just been on such a tear, laughing at Emmanuel Macron's sunglasses and maybe suggesting that Brigitte Macron has slapped him in the face again.
Well, we know that he has. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's just, it's vintage Trump. I mean,
yeah.
It's Trump, like J.D. Vance said, going into the lion's den and just not giving an inch, not backing down. You know. This is, we've been talking about masculinity, weak men, strong men. I mean, you only need to contrast Trump with someone like Mark Carney, right?
I mean,
this is the vision of, this is the difference between weak men and strong men representing their country's real interests rather than the interests of a narrow globalist elite, you know, that, is quite happy to despoil their nations and, you know, sell their nations down the river and replace the native population wholesale. You know, you've got a brave, basically alpha Chad, Giga Chad leader who just goes there and just says what he thinks and, you know, deals with the consequences.
Yeah.
And it is amazing how much, as a general rule, you know, people hate a man who says what he thinks and feels and stands by it in the face of, cause I mean, he's there basically on his own. You know? He is in the lion's den. It's the whole world against him. And they had that stupid, no kings display up on the mountain and stuff. He's the main character, of course, at Davos. So yeah, it is all about Trump.
Yeah. It's very fun. As much as, you know, we might, brilliant. As much as, you know, we might complain about, you know, he's not arresting enough people and all that stuff. He provides such a potent model for the great man as it can exist, in the modern age. And actually that was where I first, heard the word you used earlier. I wrote it down because I always forget it. Thymos, was a video from Sargon of Akkad, Carl Benjamin, talking about the great man theory and that it was this, you know, what Trump represented is this return of something that the liberal elite told us was over forever. That was the past, the great man theory. First, they'll say it never really existed. It's all trends and forces, but basically they don't want to believe that, you know, men with vision and ideas can actually alter the course of all of human history. And Trump is a shining example of that.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, you know, you could talk about Oswald Spengler. You could talk about the return of Caesarism or whatever, you know, the return of the great man at the end of the sort of, dying republic or whatever. But I mean, yeah, it is a return to the great man theory. I mean, it's a direct, Donald Trump is a direct refutation of the notion that one man cannot change the world.
Yeah.
I mean, because he really has through sheer force of personality and will.
Yeah.
It's inspiring because, of course, it ramifies, you know, we were talking about this in the break, it ramifies at every single level. So it's not just the fact that we're told that actually great men don't exist, a great men, capital G, capital M. It's that men don't exist. It's that individuals don't exist. It's that we're all prey to social forces and structures. You know, we don't really have any agency, but actually you do. And, you know, to watch Donald Trump doing that kind of stuff, being so defiant, standing up in the face of all of these awful globalist lickspittles.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, that is inspiring. That's empowering, I think, on an individual level as well as a national level.
It is. And, of course, you know, Trump's not the only one. Elon Musk, I think, is in that mold. I mean, I think people are going to be talking about him for the next 2,000 years. And the way that he opened up X has had profound effect on the course of human history from here on out. The fact that we are even aware of certain things that we wouldn't be aware of otherwise. Yeah. Alex Jones, I'd put in that same mold, right? He just did it. Nobody paved the way for him. There was no position he was slotted into. He had to be a maverick. He had to blaze his own trail. And you can do that. And it's, there's something fundamental about that, right? There's something, but there's also something that it's almost a, like a fail safe. Like it's almost like when we want to trust the system, but at a certain point, the system starts to break down and you know, like we're relying on these men like Elon Musk or Donald Trump to sort of step in that gap and haul things back as an individual. And it's almost, it's like, it's a condemnation of our systems that we require people like Trump and Elon Musk. Do you see what I'm saying? Do you know what I mean? That it's like, I'm glad that Elon Musk stepped up, bought X, and opened up free speech, even though all the prevailing winds against him. But we shouldn't need that. We should already have free speech. Our system should uphold these things. We shouldn't need to rely on these individuals. It's not a safe bet that we're always going to be delivered an Elon Musk or a Trump. You know, we need systems that can uphold these rather than the men. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I do. No, I mean, I do think that the emergence of strong men and the return of the great man, whether you're talking about Trump or whether you're talking about Musk, is a condemnation of the system, of course. It's like, right, you know, all the hopes of the nation rest upon this one person or these two or three people. And yes, you can't, although it does seem to be let's say it is something of an historical cycle or of an historical rule that actually these people do emerge in times of crisis, in times of profound confusion. You do get someone who somehow just seems to embody the hopes and fears of the entire nation. And I mean, Donald Trump really is in his person, and I've written about this kind of extensively. He does embody Americanism. Like, he is an actual, he's a man and he's a symbol.
He's like an avatar, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, like even his hair is gold.
Right.
The American dream. It's Donald Trump's spun gold hair. You know? Yeah. But like, but yeah, I mean, we can't be complacent, I think, in just assuming that, I mean, yes, we have these great men, but we can't just be complacent in assuming that they're going to solve everything. I mean,
right,
we have to work too. We have to push too. We all have to bear some of the load, even if, nevertheless, you have these titanic figures who are carrying basically the hopes and fears and destiny of a nation on their back. You know, we have to push too.
And one of the important things about the great men is that they inspire that in other people, or they give you a path forward, which is why the powers that be now are so insistent on punishing Trump and punishing Musk as an example to go, you think you can stand up against us, but we will destroy you in the end, as a signal to everybody who might be inspired by them.
Yeah, of course. And it's an attempt. And also what they try to do is they try to delegitimize them in various different ways. You know, like, Donald Trump was never a successful businessman. Donald Trump was a nepo baby. You know, he inherited money from his father, who was a kind of real estate mogul in New York or whatever. And the same with Elon Musk, right? Oh, his family were in diamonds before whatever. And he's just stolen money from people. So he's not actually a great man. You know, he isn't a visionary. He isn't maybe our only hope at the moment, certainly of becoming an interplanetary species and colonizing Mars and then from there the rest of the solar system, whatever. No, it's just these people are just thieves.
Yeah.
They're robber barons, basically, is what they are. But,
And that's the idea that's put across. And even as you're saying that, you can just hear the hatred, the anger, the jealousy that comes out. Like, I can't imagine being in that mindset. But I think it's important to understand that that's where a lot of people are coming from. They see great men and it literally makes them mad. It makes them seethe. It makes them angry for some reason.
Well, it does. And I mean, I think because their project is the transformation of society in a very particular way. But you know, we were talking before the show about Robin Hood, and you were saying about, there's a new Robin Hood film that's coming out that's called The Death of Robin Hood, I think. I don't know. Have you seen the trailer for this?
I've heard about it, but I don't remember what the...
Well, so it's, you know, it's like, it's one of these, of course. It's got Hugh Jackman in it, I think, as an elderly Robin Hood. But basically the tagline is something like, he was no hero.
Of course.
Of course, right? And so it's like Robin Hood at the end of his life confessing his sins, you know, and he's an old man and he's killed people and he's robbed and you know, he wasn't actually a good man. He didn't deserve to be mythologized. He wasn't a hero. And that's what happens. I mean, we see this happening across us. It's not just Donald Trump. It's not just Elon Musk. It's male role models across the board, right? And that's part of the reason why we have all of these kind of ridiculous girl boss, films and all of these stereotypes of, there was actually an article about this the other day about the fact, you know, why is Hollywood and TV so obsessed with, mediocre men, the mediocrity of men and the kind of suppressed excellence of women. And so it's like, who run the world? Girls, right? They're the women secretly are the competent ones. And so we're told, for example, you know, with the NASA moon landing, it was the longhand calculations of this young woman.
I was going to say, Robin Hood not worth celebrating, the human calculators at NASA are, right? Yeah. We got our priorities crooked here.
But it's very deliberate. Like, it makes you sigh. I mean, it makes you sigh and you're like, oh, not another film where they've, you know, it's like the Predators film that they did where it was, among the American Indians, you know, and it's a girl boss fighting the Predator with a bow and arrow, and you've gone from Arnie with a, you know, with a chain gun and.
Yeah, the minigun, yeah. But it's everything, right? It's Star Wars, it's Lord of the Rings. All of them have been deliberately hollowed out like this, and it's why Hollywood is collapsing now, because nobody, you know, connects with that. Nobody, you know, that doesn't inspire anybody. Mm. It's fake, it's false. Everybody gets that intrinsically, or like, you know, at the lower levels of their brain, it doesn't make sense. So nobody connects to it.
Yeah.
It's inspiring. It's nothing.
Yeah. Well, you're not giving people the kind of stories that they yearn for. I mean, women need inspiring stories too. Of course they do. And I mean, you know, like you have films like Alien from 1979, you know, I mean, Ripley was a strong female lead, but it didn't bash you around the head with feminist messaging. It didn't say that all of the men on the Nostromo were useless and they were mediocre white men who'd been promoted simply because they were, you know, mediocre.
And she had a hard time defeating the aliens. Yeah. It wasn't a cakewalk for her, like Rey from Star Wars or whatever.
Yeah, it wasn't this sort of ridiculous kind of girl bossery that you see with like She-Hulk or something, or Rey in Star Wars or whatever. But yeah, you know, you're selling people stuff that they don't want. And actually, the thing is, they don't have to buy it.
Right.
That's the thing. And so we still, thankfully, we live in a society actually where people don't have to buy films. You don't have to watch The Rings of Power.
Right.
If you don't want to see, you know, girl bosses running amok in Tolkien's Middle Earth. You don't have to buy it. Thank God.
Absolutely. And actually, and again, just to reference him again, Sargon of Akkad came out with a really brilliant video recently, and I actually keep having it in my video list, but I haven't gone to it yet. But he's talking about Tolkien and George R. Martin and the contrast between these two worldviews. And I think that sort of applies to what we're talking about, because it's sort of the best embodiment of these two ideas. You have Aragorn, the quintessential great man, right? The return of the king, the great man, you know, swooping in to save his people. Whereas in George R. Martin, his whole, you know, reason he writes books is to bash that down and to say, no, your heroes are worthless and will be killed and all the evil people will win. And there's something very fundamental about that where, again, you know, people are still to this day obsessed with Lord of the Rings. It was written 100 years ago. Game of Thrones has been off the air 3 years and nobody even cares about it anymore.
Yeah, that's funny. What was that about? What's Aragorn's tax policy?
That's the name of it.
Yeah, that's something that George R. R. Martin actually said. He was like, I don't like the Lord of the Rings because you don't get a sense of what Aragorn's tax policy would be. You've got the wrong end of the stick here. If you think that's what this, you know, what this, trilogy is supposed to be is about, you know, how Aragorn is going to run Gondor once he defeats
the bureaucracy.
Sauron.
But what does the bureaucracy look like?
Yeah. but it's a strange thing, you know, this obsession with gray.
Yeah.
So there's no black and white. And I mean, it's a fundamental mistake because, of course, you know, people will say, well, you know, there's no, hard and fast point at which white becomes black, right? Mm. And that's true. You know, you shade through from one to the other. But nevertheless, you can represent at the opposite end of the spectrum. You can see that actually white is not black.
Right.
And so, I mean, yeah, I mean, if you want to depict a kind of fantasy medieval setting in morally ambiguous terms, and you want to suggest maybe that actually, you know, even the good guys have to employ foul means in order to whatever, or that people don't get what they deserve. But that happens in Lord of the Rings too. I mean, does Boromir deserve to die?
Right.
You know, there's a complexity to Lord of the Rings, but it's a different kind of complexity, and it's an attempt to tell a story, I think, on a really grand scale, verging on the mythological. And I mean, Tolkien had this idea that actually, the 20th century, the modern world needed a new mythos.
Right.
And, a mythos isn't an exposition of a tax policy. A mythos is an organizing narrative that provides you with a clear direction in which to,
in which to orient yourself in the world in order to act meaningfully. And, you know, that's what the Lord of the Rings is. It's like fight for your people, fight for what's right.
And it's so funny because the left seems bent on like shattering these illusions, but they aren't illusions. Lord of the Rings is more realistic, I think, than Game of Thrones is. And actually, it was you that asked me to write an article about the Alamo. So I look to the Alamo of something. It's like a fantasy movie. It's like this idea of these, you know, this ragtag group of nobodies who goes up against this army of thousands and they die. But in their sacrifice, you know, victory is born. It's like, no, actually, good guys don't always lose. Actually, you know, the left wants us to believe that, you know, nothing good ever happens. Actually, it's what Alex Jones always says. You know, the devil's greatest trick was not convincing people he didn't exist. The devil's greatest trick is convincing people good doesn't exist to fight back against him. And that's where I think the George R. Martins of the world are coming from, is they think it's you're a stupid child if you believe good exists and can defeat evil. Evil will always win. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy to a great extent, too. You can look at what Sauron did in Lord of the Rings, right? He was using the Palantir to convince his enemies that they had already lost. And so they had to join him. That's why, you know, Saruman went over to him, because Saruman, he was showing him these fake images of this huge army that was undefeatable. So like, that's a big part of it, right? Is pushing out to the people of the West, you've already lost. It's hopeless. You can't win. Give up. Try to get your own while you can. Don't worry about the future. That is such a pernicious and evil and self-fulfilling idea.
Well, one of the funny things actually about the sort of Lord of the Rings discourse as a result of the Rings of Power in particular has been this attempt to humanize the orcs.
Right.
Right. And we've seen it before actually in the kind of Starship Troopers discourse, where you get leftists saying, oh my God, you really think that the humans are the good guys? The bugs are the good guys.
They unironically side with the bugs.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, no, like it's a normal thing to be in favor of your own species. I mean, you know, trying to extend the kind of imperialism metaphor. But yeah, I mean, they're really pushing this idea that actually you should watch the Rings of Power and you should actually think, well, the orcs, you know, they're aggressive, and but you know, like, they're just trying to protect their own people. They want to have a land of their own, to have children and raise their families. And it's just, it's so confused. It's so insane and confused. I mean, it doesn't stand up to scrutiny, and it certainly doesn't stand up to any kind of, I don't even know. I think you just almost present it on its own terms. You just say like, look, I mean, these people genuinely think that, you know, you should be rooting for the orcs, for the bugs in Starship Troopers. I mean, they're
not joking.
No, their moral sense, their moral intuitions are so corrupted. And they're so obsessed with victimization and imperialism and the kind of crime of self-assertiveness and self-interest and, you know, kind of protecting your own, that they'll just come out with this crazy stuff.
Yeah. Well, and that's actually another part of the George R. R. Martin thing in the same interview, I think, where he asks, you know, what is Aragorn's tax policy? He says, you know, well, what about all the orcs? There are still orcs out there at the end of the movie. Is he just going to go around and slaughter them? And it's like, yeah. Yeah,
you're going to
go around and slaughter all of them. Yes. Even the little orc babies, like, yeah, those two. No, all of the orcs are dying. And then, of course, you have the scene from Lord of the Rings where they're drawn fully formed out of a sack of ooze. So it's not like there are even our orc babies to worry about. But that, it's funny, because that was another thing George R. R. Martin asked, was, what about all the poor orcs? Oh dear.
Yeah. I mean,
we're going to throw them in a volcano.
But you know, what's quite funny actually about George R. R. Martin is that he can't finish the Game of Thrones series, you know, because he's actually written himself, and he's admitted this, he's written himself into a corner where he's killed off anybody who was noble, anybody who was worthy, anybody who could actually carry the narrative forward in a way that would be not just satisfying, but also even just like logical. It's like, is it just a kind of directionless story where it's just people endlessly slaughtering each other, which isn't really a story at all?
Right.
It's just carnage. Or is it actually a story where you do have a hero and someone you can root for? And, you know, I mean, they kind of had to, well, they resurrected Jon Snow, didn't they?
I think they'd have to, yeah.
In the series.
In the, in the movies they did, yeah.
Yeah, and they made it very, very kind of Hollywood, I think, in the way that it finished. Because,
right.
because they kind of, they had to restore a something satisfying to the narrative. Because it's like, I mean, you can watch The Red Wedding and, oh, this is shocking, you know, we never expected that this guy that we all liked would be murdered like this and his whole family and whatever. But you can't actually build a satisfying narrative around that. Like 10 seasons of that would just be, it's actually boring. It makes you very jaded. And I think a lot of Redditors who kind of really like that sort of stuff are pretty jaded anyway. And I think George R. R. Martin is probably quite jaded too.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, earlier in the show, we were talking about people like Jordan Peterson and, you know, inspiring masculinity. And this all ties in with that, right? You need heroes. You need, you know, his famous quote is, you don't tell stories to make the kids scared of dragons. You tell the stories to tell them they can defeat the dragons, right? So, you know, we're missing that. We're missing that inspiration of like, yeah, it's hard. And yeah, you know, the evil seems really strong, but actually good wins in the end. If you persist, because that's actually the truth. That's actually real.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's what people clamor for. And I think you do only need to look at, you know, the way that people are abandoning these new kind of revisionist versions of the Lord of the Rings and all that kind of stuff to see that. Like people do really want a traditional narrative that's structured in a way that is comprehensible, that can actually provide some kind of orientation in real life.
Yeah. I get, you know, with Lord of the Rings and George R. R. Martin, I mean, he is taking a form that is built on the back of, like, the spine of the fantasy novel is the hero. So it's like, how do you make this and then, you know, withdraw the most important aspect of it, which is the central heroic character that wins against all odds. Like, without that, you're just, you know, no one would watch Star Wars if Luke got blown up in the final trench run and, you know, the Empire continued. You know, it's like nobody would watch that.
Yeah, well, I mean, if George R. R. Martin had written the original trilogy, then he would have died in the assault on the Death Star, wouldn't he, in the New Hope.
And that would have been it, yeah.
And that would have been it. And then you would have just had some, you know, kind of rumination on Emperor Palpatine's tax policy.
Yeah, but, exactly. You know,
I mean.
That's the best way to put it. That's exactly right. I think, I'll tell the crew, because I pulled in the video yesterday, and it's pretty long, but the very end of Sargon's video I thought was especially powerful. Because, again, it is about inspiring people with reality and knowing that actually good wins because it's good. Evil doesn't win because it's evil. You just need good people to fight. And we're going to open up the phone lines for your calls next hour as well. So if we can open up the phone lines now, I'll go ahead and give out the number. It's 1-877-789-2539. We do need to get some videos from the World Economic Forum and other stuff going on. And we've just been having a great time talking about masculinity as a concept. When we get back, we'll talk about, you know, how this impacts with geopolitics. In the meantime, I do want you to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Remember, you're getting a free shirt with any purchase of any size at thealexjonesstore.com. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. It is a $40 value, a $40 shirt, but you get it absolutely free, and it's the only way you can get it. So if you're trying to collect all the InfoWars shirts, you need to go now to thealexjonesstore.com. Any purchase gets you that free shirt. And this only goes on for a few more days. So go now, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison, and we'll be back on the other side with Hour 3, your calls, and more.
I reckon a lot of you know I've been on the air for a long time, and we've done quite a few things here. And I've had a lot of different ways that I tried to continue on our mission. So I want to tell you about a begging right here. This is a limited edition knife. We just came out with it a couple days ago. And well, some people call it a sling blade. I call it a Kaiser blade. But you need something to take care of yourself and your family and protect you. I think this will do it. It's an important remake. Updated World War II trench knife, double-edged stainless steel, razor sharp. Life is fiery with its beauty. It's got a nice little pin-up girl there right there on it. Mm-hmm. So I reckon this is just about as good as you're going to get as some fried taters and biscuits and mustard. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get one of these before they sell out with the murdered out brass knuckles and skull crusher, then I reckon you better get on over to thealexjonesstore.com while the getting's good. And I appreciate you keeping us on the air in our mission. Mm-hmm. I call it a Kaiser Blade. And it's a limited edition right now. Mm-hmm. But all I know is the globalists shouldn't have done what they did to that boy. What Epstein did. So all I can say is they're going to have the Lord to deal with. But, limited edition, almost sold out. I just know you want this knife. It's selling out quick. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And I thank you for your support.
Welcome back, folks. Third hour of the War Room is on. I'm actively trying to drag in this video of from Sargon of Akkad, a.k.a. Carl Benjamin, in his video on Aragorn's tax policy, the difference between George R. Martin and J.R.R. Tolkien and their what they value and why some of their stories resonate with us and others don't. I just dropped it in there, number one. Let me know when you have that. We'll go to it. In studio with me is Dr. Charles Cornish Dale, a.k.a. Raw Egg Nationalist. Follow him on X at BabyGravy9. And RawEggNationalist.com is where you can find his new book, The Last Men, Liberalism, and the Death of Masculinity. So we can go to this video here. This is, again, from Sargon of Akkad. The video is called something about Aragorn's tax policy. But this is the very end. I thought this was a very inspiring last couple minutes. Let's watch.
His storytelling thereby acts as a narcotic in which he attempts to demoralize us in the same way that he himself has been demoralized. He is trying to make us accept that the rule of Sauron is inevitable. And it is in this frame which his own story is trapped, contained, and strangled. The question, what is Aragorn's tax policy, is the first step down this road. And what then, we can ask, is the result of accepting the reign of Sauron? Will men resign themselves to the boot of the outsider being forever on their neck? Will they give up all pretense of morality, of heroic struggle, of self-sacrifice, of attempting to bring a just moral order into existence, even if that moral order is deeply flawed? Well, in Morgoth's essay about Warhammer 40,000, he actually answered this question as he wrote, "The answer to George R.R. Martin's question, what would Aragorn's tax policy be, is 10,000 psykers sacrificed daily to feed energy into the corpse of a god emperor holding the line against the forces of hell itself. No, men will not give up the struggle, and no matter how bad things get, we will, in fact, cling to whatever kind of order we can bring together in the face of evil. No matter how insufficient it might seem to a liberal in their comfortable armchair, and no matter what the cost. It doesn't matter how late the hour, how dark the night, how dire the situation. We will never give ourselves over to the disgusting, weak, liberal nihilism that declares that everyone is as bad as everyone else. We will not capitulate to the moral reign of Sauron, the perversion of the world, and the despoiling of the very notion that there can be a worthy good. And no sad boomer libtard is going to change that. It is not inevitable that Sauron wins. It is not inevitable that the world slips into vice, and it is not guaranteed that the heroes will fail. We will do whatever it takes, for however long is necessary, because the struggle is the forces of good against the forces of evil, the forces of order against the forces of chaos, the forces of justice against the forces of injustice, and it is the only war worth fighting. And so I am afraid, George, that the time is nigh for you to pick a side and finish your book."
Absolutely fantastic stuff, again, from Sargon of Akkad, a.k.a. Carl Benjamin. I watched this whole video about, Lord of the Rings, but then he ends with this 5 minutes of like, no, this is a fight of good against evil, and it doesn't matter what the cost is. It was so inspiring. I loved that. Powerful stuff, man.
Yeah, seriously powerful stuff. And the Warhammer 40K stuff is very funny because, of course, you know, Warhammer 40K as it has become and Warhammer as it has become more popular has also been subject to a kind of Redditification where people are like, you know, you're not supposed to like the Space Marines. You know, you're not supposed to be rooting for humanity, right? You know, they're like space Nazis, you know, the Emperor is immortal space Hitler. But
sorry.
Yeah, sorry, it's cool.
Sorry, it's awesome, actually. It's very cool. And if you want to like the orcs, you can do that too. Yep. More power to you. But yeah, I love that response. You know, what is the tax policy? 10,000 psykers fed to, cause if you don't know, the Warhammer, that is the Warhammer setting. Basically, to uphold humanity, they have to sacrifice 10,000 people a day. And hey, that's the system. You gotta work within it, right? We'll be right back. We're on the other side. Stay with us.
G-Man, all the free-flowing methylene blue is now mine!
No way, you evil scum. Methylene blue is for everyone!
Order methylene blue at the alexjonesstore.com.
We're gonna make it, men!
Now look here. Even to this very day, I still have my trusty old trench knife from the war.
Order now at the alexjonesstore.com.
Have you ever been experienced? Well, we have. Let us show you now on The War Room with Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Third hour of The War Room is on. Raw Egg Nationalist has been kind enough to give us 2 hours of his time. We're going to take your calls. His book is called The Last Men, Liberalism and the Death of Masculinity. It can be found at raweggnationalist.com. At BabyGravy9 is how you follow him on X. And I see the lines are filling up, and we'll go to your calls in just a minute. Can you tell us a little bit more about the book? Like, what are people going to learn from this? Who's the intended audience? Is this for young men looking to protect themselves from the wiles of feminism? Or is this who's the book written for?
I think it's actually written for a variety of different audiences. I mean, there is direct practical advice in the book about, you know, protecting your, conserving your masculinity, developing your masculinity, how to protect yourself against exposure to endocrine disrupting chemicals, that kind of thing. So there's, I mean, it's a part of my work really that I actually, you know, I paint quite a dismal picture, you know, of the kind of biological reality of life today. But I also do try to empower people to do things because there are things that you can do. You can protect yourself. You might not be able to eliminate your exposure to microplastics, but you can mitigate it significantly just through simple things like not drinking water from a plastic bottle,
right,
or not heating food in plastic containers in the microwave.
Or vacuuming your house more often.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, it's directed at men who are looking to improve their masculinity, to develop their testosterone. But it's actually a serious philosophical book, and it's framed in a serious philosophical way. I mean, I do think that there is something to this notion that actually the political crisis today is also a biological crisis. And so it is a serious philosophically informed attempt actually to redirect this whole discourse about masculinity and about the kind of course of liberal society in a more biological direction. So it will appeal to lots of different people. I mean, it's written as a popular book, so it's not impenetrable. It's not written as an academic book. It's not written, you know, like my PhD was, you know.
Right.
It's not kind of referenced like a PhD or whatever, and it's aimed at a popular audience. But it's a serious book. It's a weighty tome.
A weighty tome indeed. Of course, it's not your fault that you're painting a dismal picture. You are presenting reality, and reality, yeah, at this point, rather dismal, one might say. So again, the book is The Last Men,
liberalism. Sorry, why can I not find it here? The Last Men, Liberalism and the Death of Masculinity. Sorry, I just wanted to get it right there. From Skyhorse Publishing, and you can find it at raweggnationalist.com. And again, it just fits perfectly into InfoWars as an outlet, as we've always said. You know, there are two sort of approaches that we take. You have to try to solve these problems at the systemic level while also not being victims to the stuff on an individual level. Mm. And this fits perfectly, right? We need to correct the systems that are poisoning us, that are, diminishing our testosterone. But we can't wait on the whole system to change. You also need to be taking actions in your own life to mitigate some of the more devastating consequences of the modern world. So it just fits in perfectly. And again, with MAHA and MAGA, it's like this whole movement, however you want to define it, it really is like the InfoWars Alex Jones movement that brought all these seemingly disparate threads together. And in that way, you really open up to people that aren't necessarily aligned with us politically. Because everybody recognizes you need clean air, you need clean water. I've gotten in-depth conversations with, hippie chicks at parties about what water filter they like. Because it's like we might not have anything in common, but we both eat food and we both want the food not to be poisoned. Is that not something we can come together on? So there's really a lot of opportunities for unity when it comes to health, biology, this sort of stuff.
Yeah, there is. And I mean, one of the interesting things about the recent development of politics in the States, about the election campaign in particular, was that actually, the Democrats didn't offer an alternative to RFK Jr.
Right.
There was no left-wing MAHA.
Right.
That was just completely absent from the campaign. That was like a unique selling point for Trump once RFK Jr. got on board. And so it is a unifying issue, and it should be a unifying issue, but it's interesting actually to see the way that actually the left has abandoned health.
Yeah.
And so much of, it was left-wing hippies in the 1960s and 70s who were talking about raw milk and about getting enough sunlight and about reconnecting with nature and avoiding food laced with pesticides, organic food, all this kind of stuff. And yet now it's raw milk is a right-wing dog whistle.
Yeah.
It's very strange. It's very strange.
But, it's sort of breaking out of that mold. So I was just thinking, I hadn't really thought about this yet, but I was hanging out with some people I know that are very normie. Like, they don't want to know anything about what goes on here. Like, they just are totally uninterested and very, very much normie. But the wife said something about, we're trying to avoid that, just avoid the microplastics. Mm. And I was like, you know about microplastics? Like, what? How do you know about, and you care about it? You don't think that's a weird thing to avoid? Cause, it's so weird talking to people and you're like, fluoride lowers the IQ. And people are like, well, that's fine. It's like, well, why are you fine with this? So it's really not a right wing thing anymore, right? But it is. And we need to sort of let people know that, like, hey, look, these microplastics are being spread kind of on purpose. Like, they could have stopped this at any point. They want you weak. Like, they understand microplastics are being introduced to this idea and they get it. They haven't really drawn the conclusions out of it that maybe they need to. But clearly, the other beautiful thing about MAHA comes things like tallow. We didn't have to pass a law to tell fast food companies to start cooking in tallow anymore. They did it because the market changed, because there was a demand for it. And so they're filling the demand. So really, in terms of like true success, MAHA, that aspect of this movement has had more success, I think, than just about any other part.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this is really the kind of blueprint, actually, I think, for the future of politics. It's really is the foundation of a kind of broad political movement that can actually draw people from the left and the right together in pursuing the same objectives. I mean, surely we want our children to be healthy. We don't want our children to grow up with metabolic dysfunctions, with reproductive problems, with, low fertility, low testosterone, all these kinds of things. And so, I mean, yes, I think it's a real change. And, when I first came on the scene, a lot of people would, especially on the right, would say to me, well, why does health matter? Why are you presenting this as a political thing? And I'm like, trust me, this is political. I mean, health is the health of I've said this before, that a nation is only as strong as the individuals of which it's composed.
Right.
That's the basic kind of insight of raw egg nationalism that I became the figurehead of, that has kind of transitioned into MAHA and fed into MAHA. But, you can make a an almost like an apolitical case for something like Mahar. And that's why it's so powerful.
Yeah.
And the longer that the Democrats don't actually really sort of understand that, I mean, the more the advantage goes to whoever has RFK Jr. in their camp and whoever is kind of leading the Mahar movement. But yeah, I think it's been a big success. It's been very positive. I mean, you know, okay, you've got people, you know, of course they're abusing RFK Jr. and he's still got members of his family speaking out about him and calling him this and that and saying he's a bad guy. But, you know, I mean, it's an overwhelmingly positive movement. The objectives are overwhelmingly positive, like protecting the children, protecting the environment, conserving what's important for the next generation. I mean,
well, you know, but then you look at the left and it's like their number one topic the last couple of years has been trans children. So I guess it's no wonder they're not jumping on the Maha train. There's something about their belief system that's fundamentally out of step with nature. So, you know, maybe it's an inevitability that all this stuff becomes right wing.
Well,
at a certain point.
I mean, in the book, then there's a chapter in the book specifically about the gay frogs controversy. And about why Alex Jones was right. But in particular, it's about, there's a new study or a reasonably new study. It was new when I wrote the book, that shows for the first time really a direct link between exposure to endocrine disrupting chemicals during gestation. So in the womb, and transgenderism later in life.
Right.
And there was always the prima facie case for that was always there. It was there when Alex Jones was talking about the Tyrone Hayes, atrazine frog experiments in 2015. But now and it's been a subject actually that researchers haven't wanted to touch. So they could have done the research. They could have followed on from the frog studies in 2010 and said, okay, if atrazine is doing this to frogs, let's look at rates of transgenderism and let's see if they correlate with exposure to atrazine.
Right.
Let's plot on a map of America, you know, because you can plot how much atrazine is sprayed over, you know, I mean, there are maps you can bring up on Google Maps now that will show you where atrazine is sprayed the most in the US. And, you know, you could look at rates of transgenderism and see if there's a correlation and then you could go from there. They just didn't do it because it was politically explosive. Well,
and I think they actually lobbied to not do it, right? There was a potential bill coming forward that would have made them do these tests and the companies lobbied to not have them done because they knew what the answer would have been, I think.
Yeah. And so, you know, but now there's this study that shows, you know, like it was a French boys and their mothers had been exposed to this estrogenic chemical called diethyl stilbestrol, which was given to women who had bad cases of morning sickness and had miscarried before. So it was given to them while they were pregnant, and then the boys who were given it ended up with something like 100 or even 1,000-fold increased risk of becoming transgender.
Wow.
And so that's a direct correlation. Now, you can't just say, well, we can infer from the frog studies. It's like, actually, no. I mean, look, we've got a direct suggestion of causation
in humans
in this study, so let's take it seriously. But it's such a, the transgenderism issue is so integral to the left's vision of not only of transforming society but of transforming the individual, liberating the individual from the few remaining bonds, you know. So we liberate the individual from class and we liberate them from race and whatever, but what's left? Gender.
Right.
You liberate the individual from gender and you can be whatever you want to be. You can be a man, you can be a woman, whatever you choose. It's a sincere decision that is totally yours. And what the scientific literature suggests is that no, actually, chemicals are messing with people's wiring. Chemicals are interfering with fundamental biological processes that begin at the moment of conception in the womb and continue through childhood and puberty into adulthood. These chemicals like atrazine, diethyl stilbestrol, phthalates, BPA, interfere with the crucial testosterone to estrogen ratio, and yeah, they might be responsible for gender dysphoria. They might be responsible for physical disfigurements, you know, the development of the penis and testes or vagina or whatever that isn't correct. And so, you know, individuals think that they're intersex, and then, you know, you have an obliging liberal regime that's more than happy to hack off their genitals and turn them inside out or the opposite. And so, yeah, I mean, it's, it's a conclusion that the left cannot face.
Right. Well, because it takes it out of the realm of cultural equality, where they say, well, being gay, being straight, being trans, being non-trans, it's all the same. Well, when it comes to nature, when it comes to animals, there's functional and there's dysfunctional, and these frogs are dysfunctional, and being transgender, you know, which wouldn't be the case, but it'd be basically the frogs were turning gay, which means they were trying to mate with other males.
Well, they were successfully mating with other males as well. So this is the crazy thing. So the, when atrazine was introduced to the larvae, the male larvae were turning to females who could then successfully mate with males and produce viable offspring. I mean, that's how crazy it was.
So literal transsexual frogs, right? So not even transgender, transsexual frogs. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's not like you can say, well, everything is equal. Each choice is as good as the other. When you're talking about science, when you're talking about nature, when you're talking about beings that are not making conscious decisions, but following instinct, there is functional and dysfunctional. And what's happening is these chemicals are making dysfunctional beings.
Yeah.
And that's a very uncomfortable thing.
And what's, you know, I mean, I make a case for, although I advocate and I say, look, this is, we got the scientific evidence, you know, this is biology, this is real. There's a compassionate case to be made. This is an avoidable harm.
Right.
You know, like if we get these horrible chemicals out of the water, out of the air, out of the food supply, we can prevent people from being born thinking that they were born in the wrong body. We can prevent, you know, transgender people suffer. They really do suffer. It's a, it's an avoidable harm. I mean, it's very easy to take the, you know, to take the mick out of these crazy people and their crazy ideas. And some of them are crazy and some of it is just a social contagion, you know, in the same way that eating disorders are social contagions, bulimia, anorexia have been cutting, that kind of stuff has been a social contagion. But there is also this biological core and there is also this kind of biological crisis. And so, if you could do something like that, why wouldn't you? Like, you're the compassionate people, aren't you? You're the people who want actually to help people. Well, why don't you want to clean up the environment? Why don't you want to stop children being exposed to massive amounts of atrazine in the womb?
And the irony is they would if it was the other way around. If we said, hey, we have a chemical that we can give to gay people, it'll make them straight, they would go, that's a crime against humanity. Well, it's what's happening here. It's just the other way around. And you know what? On that note, we'll go to calls after this, but clip 37 here, I was going to play this today anyway, because as good as Maha's been, as good as RFK has been, they are doing things with pesticide that are completely inexplicable and horrible. So let's go. This is Sean Johnson, but he's talking about something we've reported on a few times. Clip 37, they're doing it on the national level. Now apparently Tennessee is trying to give basically carte blanche, total legal immunity to international pesticide companies. Let's watch.
One of the basic rights that we have as Americans, or more specifically today, Tennesseans, have the right to a court if we've been harmed. And today, here in Tennessee, the officials that you and I both elected are proposing a bill that gives immunity to, get this, foreign, not even American, pesticide companies. Now, I'm pretty sure all of us agree. I mean, this was a huge topic last year. All the pesticides, all, how many people do you know that have died from cancer in the past week, month, year, decade? Well, get ready, because a lot more are going to die of cancer, because that's right. Our politicians here in Tennessee are proposing a bill to give immunity to foreign pesticide corporations. That means pesticides are going to be in our water, our wild game, our food, everything. Good job, Tennessee. Thanks for taking care of the people. No normal human being thinks that's a good idea, unless you're getting paid.
There you go. I think that's the key to it right there. Sean Ryan, by the way. Sorry, Sean Johnson is the other guy. It's Alex Jones's friend. He summed it up right there, right? No normal person would think this is a good idea. Who would want to give immunity to pesticide companies? It is insane.
Yeah, it is insane. It's worrying because, I mean, RFK Jr. for 30 years plus has been an advocate for holding these corporations accountable. And he's shone a light, a very bright light on the iniquities of the regulatory system that allows these corporations to get away with poisoning people and with pretending that their products aren't enormously harmful. And so it was always going to be a central plank of Make America Healthy Again. You know, we're going to have a new regulatory system. We're going to hold these companies accountable. We're not going to let them, spray the food and the environment with harmful chemicals, chemicals that they know are harmful as well. There's that very, very funny, very famous clip of a Bayer, or a Monsanto executive, as it was then, saying, oh yeah, I'll drink a glass of glyphosate. There are no possible harm could come to a human being from, you know, consuming a glass of glyphosate. And then the interviewer, calls the guy's bluff and it's like, well, we've actually got some glyphosate here. I'll pour you a glass of glyphosate and you can drink it just to show how safe your product is. And he's like, don't you be so stupid. This is ridiculous. But I mean, they know, of course.
They know exactly
course,
what they're doing.
Of course they 100%. Know.
Well, they covered up. They had, you know, it was revealed. I think it was Monsanto's had like a, you know, they called it like the black office where they would go and like intimidate reporters into not covering this stuff. I mean, you don't do that if you are not doing anything wrong, right? It just seems kind of obvious. Yeah. They're scrambling. Maybe on that. No, well, we'll go to calls. I don't want to keep people holding on too much, but one of the things that came up at the World Economic Forum today was water and the availability of water. And we know, if you've been paying attention to what they've been saying, they're like, well, a virus is a little bit too out there, but people understand water. They understand being thirsty, and so we'll control them that way. But let's go to your calls now. Let's go to Sean in California here. Sean in California, thank you for calling in. You're on the air with myself and Dr. Charles Cornish Dale.
Good afternoon, Harrison. Hey, I'm in agreement with you regarding the World Economic Forum and all of Trump's statements. If we don't see prosecutions, it is nothing but hot air. However, now here's the however. There is a little bit of reporting that was been done either by Brianna or by yourself in the last, I'd say, 72 hours, in which when the sheriff showed up in Minneapolis, those protesters for ICE kind of calmed down. We don't need the National Guard. Sheriff deputies have all the powers we would need. And even in a blue city, the county surrounding it, if red, can direct that sheriff as to calm that, you know, area down. So this is just one of the things we the people have in our back pocket as a tool. You've heard me harp on the sheriff for years. If they don't act accordingly, you vote them out.
Yep.
Get your election integrity up to check, and you can control that sheriff very easily.
Well, there's that awesome video from earlier this week of that sheriff being told that he was going to be, you know, withdrawn from his position. He basically said, you don't have the authority to do that, and I'm not listening. And if you try, then my citizens are going to come out and set you straight. So, yeah, sheriffs would be a great tool. Of course, the local police should be out there helping to keep peace. They're not, which is why the concept of sending in the military is even being floated. What's your take on this as a As a visitor here, what is your take on what's going on with Minneapolis, what Trump should be doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously the Trump administration has to be careful. I mean, the woman Renee Good who was shot, I mean, that was largely unavoidable, I think. I mean, we're talking with the benefit of hindsight. I mean, the man was going to be run over, but you don't want that happening. You don't want to increase the likelihood of that happening. And I do think that it's always a leftist tactic, just to dial things up, you know, dial up the tension, dial up the force your opponents, you know, to kind of accelerate and to resort to, tougher and tougher measures that make a confrontation and perhaps even make a fatal confrontation or certainly violence inevitable.
Yeah.
And so there's a fine line to be walked, I think, where, you know, there has to be a display of force. Of course there does, because if you back down in this situation, then the leftists are empowered and it will get worse rather than better. But at the same time, there are better and worse ways to make a display of force. It's a really unenviable position to be in. I wouldn't want to be the one directing the decisions and having to choose, well, do I send in the National Guard? What do I do? You know, how do I handle this situation? But, ultimately, they do only respect force, and there does have to be some kind of display of force. There has to be a reassertion, a restoration of order. And it's not going to come from the state. It's not going to come from the governor's office. It's not going to come from within, Minnesota as a whole. I think there is going to have to be, to some extent, some kind of outside intervention, but they have to do it carefully. They have to be careful.
Yeah. Cause obviously they will inspire, you know, greater pushback if they just go out there and start shooting protesters. Like, obviously that's the wrong thing to do, but it's also wrong to not do anything and allow these people a free hand, because as you point out, it is just going to get crazier and more intense. More calls on the other side. Again, I'm sitting with Raw Egg Nationalist. We will be answering your questions for the rest of the show. Go to raweggnationalist.com to get his new book, The Last Men, Liberalism and the Death of Masculinity, at Baby Gravy Nice. I can follow him on X. Follow me on X at Harrison H. Smith. Share those links. Clip them out yourself. Upload them yourself. Free to air. All this information is free to air. And we'll be right back.
I want to thank the viewers and listeners for your endless and tireless support over the years. We try to make it easy to be supporters with fabulous products that really enrich and empower your life. A wide selection of Patriot apparel, ball caps, t-shirts, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. All sorts of really cool knives, collectibles, and the most important, the best supplements you're going to find anywhere. Whatever the highest rated is, whatever has the best studies, whatever has the five-star reviews. I mean, if you don't get our ultramethylene blue, if you don't get our bovine colostrum, that's the very best. If you don't get our Shilajit or our CMOS, you're crazy. If you don't get our turmeric, that's the strongest out there. Anti-cancer, anti-inflammatory, so good for you. You're crazy. Big sales going on the site, 40% off on things like the World War II modern version trench knife, limited edition InfoWars black on white trucker hat, free with every order. And they had this thing going since Thursday. I didn't notice it until Sunday, so I had them extended one day today. But that's it. Every order gets one of these, limited edition, in there. So get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com. But with the deals we got, we need to sell a lot of stuff to fund this operation. So do yourself a favor, Mr. Sit on the Fency. I'm not mad at you. I'm telling you. Get the methylene blue. We have the best. It is so good for you. It is so game-changing. So good for your mind. So good for all your cells. So good for telomeres. Just get a bottle of ultramethylene blue. Support the broadcast. Finally, because we got even more documents in and more depositions and things, we are about to file our huge, massive civil rights suit with conspiracy against rights, all the proof, the DOJ, the CIA, the Democratic Party, you know, the law firms. I mean, this is a... And by the way, under the rules, we had to show them the suit a few weeks ago, and they went completely ape and threatened us and everything else with, you know, all this stuff they're going to do. Great, because we got all the evidence up one side and down the other. But I'm taking on the big boys. So know this, the majority of the funding you send us buying products goes to the fight against the tyrants, and we are fully committed to that. They want this show off the air because I know what I'm talking about. That's why I get mad at the shows that are, you know, innuendo and conspiracy theories. I've never been a conspiracy theorist, folks. That's what the media calls me. That's a CIA term. I am an analyst. I'm a futurist. And I know what I'm talking about. And my guests know what they're talking about. You know my rule. Who do I have on all the time? People that are consistently right. I associate with people that got their acts together. And I can tell you, we know what we're doing. This broadcast belongs to you. You built this. It's fighting for your future, my future, all of us collectively. But we can't do it without you. Make the commitment in this ocean of media and information. The bad guys particularly hate this show because we know what we're doing. We're steering people right. But we can't take these people on without you. I need your support. Word of mouth, prayer, and financial support. And I make it damn easy. This is a win-win. All you got to do is go to thealexjonesstore.com. I'm an influencer, by the way. I'm a patriot and a journalist and a pundit and an analyst and a futurist and a father and a guy that loves God. Influencer comes from the time of Plato and Aristotle and Socrates. And influencers are people that use rhetoric without facts and reality and logic to convince dumb people. So when the globalists call you all influencers and you go, yeah, I'm an influencer. Just shows how stupid you are. Stop calling yourselves influencers. I'm a philosopher. I'm a warrior. I'm a game changer. I'm a historian. I'm a fighter. I'm a pioneer. I'm an explorer. I got red blood. It's pumping through my big heart fast. I like life and freedom and justice. I like women. I like red meat. I like guns. I like sunsets and puppy dogs. And ladies of the night, to quote Waylon Jennings.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Keep your hand on your gun.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, Infowars.com, band.video. Hope that's not a signal from the crew there. I saw that in the corner. Charlotte sending me a message, I think. Welcome back, everybody. In studio with me is Dr. Charles Cornish Dale, a.k.a. Raw Egg Nationalist at BabyGravy9 on X, rawegnationalist.com. The book is The Last Men, Liberalism and the Death of Masculinity. We'll be taking your calls. Mm-hmm. I was just checking for, you know, headlines, see if there's any breaking news since we've started talking. Apparently Trump is now talking about taking all of the Arctic, not just Greenland. So he's coming. So watch out, Santa. He's coming for you. Just crazy stuff. But we're going to go out to your calls now. And in fact, it looks like 22 in Washington wants to talk about Greenland. So good timing. Go ahead. 22, you're on the air.
Hi, Harrison. Hi, baby butter, goo guy, man gravy.
Raw egg nationalist.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about raw egg nationalist. Sorry. I think to pull back the curtain on Greenland, I think the situation there has to do with military bases. You know, the Earth is like a water planet. It's mostly water. Mm-hmm. And it's really key to have bases there in the North Atlantic and by the Arctic because it's a zone for the subs. The submarine warfare is huge. And now with drone subs, which no one talks about, they can go way deeper. Yep. Normal subs go about like 2,000 feet. The drone subs go like 10,000 plus,
right?
You know, and it's a total game changer for positioning for the nuclear armament, part of the nuclear triad. If you get one of those off the coast, you know, it's a big game changer. The U.S. only has like 9 or 11, depending how you count it, Arctic bases. Russia has like over 50, you know. Mm. Now, granted, a lot of them are like search and rescue outposts and stuff. But the Arctic's always super. I've called many times before, telling you guys about the Arctic.
Any sort of missiles that were to fly into America would go over the Arctic. They wouldn't go around latitudinally. So you know, it'd be important for missile defense. What do you think is behind the urgency, though? That's what confuses me. Like, I get that Greenland would be a good thing to have for national security. I think it has a lot to do with the natural resources and AI, and that we need stuff out of Greenland that is necessary for building AI chips and stuff like that. But I'm shocked at the fact that this is just dominating the conversation, and that it's like, this has to get done right now. Like, what is it about Greenland that's so urgent? And I'll get your input, 22, but you have any idea about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is the melting of the Arctic ice and the opening of the Northwest Passage, and you know,
sea lanes will be open.
Yeah, sea lanes will be open. I think there's a desire to control trade and to ensure that China and Russia don't control the trade. The rare earth thing, I think, is obviously true. I mean, regardless of whether or not, you know, rare earth minerals are harder to access in Greenland than they might be in, say, Australia or in China or whatever. The Trump administration certainly doesn't want those minerals to be controlled by China or Russia. I mean, this stuff about drone subs is fascinating, and I had no idea. I mean, you know, the US has sought to control Greenland and to purchase Greenland for a long time. I mean, this is actually a long-term geostrategic concern for the US. And, you know, I mean, after World War II, then there was serious talk of purchasing Greenland as a site for strategic bombers, and then as a site for missile defense and staging posts and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's probably multifaceted. I don't think it's just one thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's clearly a very, very valuable territory for a number of different reasons.
Yeah. I wonder why it's become the thing now. You know, I could understand if it's like, we want Greenland and like you start negotiating, but what about you, 22 in Wisconsin? What do you think is behind the urgency of the Greenland thing?
Militarily, you know, we need that base. It's like super important. We only have one base, and it's an old one in Scotland. There's a bunch of nukes there and a submarine base. So militarily, it's key. And then also, I think for AI, Greenland has huge untapped geothermal, along with being a colder region. So you could really set up a sweet AI computer server farm up there, because you can use the cooling from the Arctic and geothermal, because the energy matters so much for big scale AI stuff. As far as rare earth, like, there's cobalt and lithium. You know, the lithium batteries are mostly cobalt, and you know, they call it rare earth, but there's deposits in a lot of the places, and they have much better batteries. It's kind of just corporate thing that they're still slinging this old battery technology to us. But quick question for Raw Nationalist. I didn't know he was going to be on. What do you think is the best way, like a three-step or a 10-step plan to like defagify the West?
That's a scientific term, I believe.
Yeah, no, that's a scientific term I'm familiar with. I think it's complicated, and I mean it's that is actually something that I touch on in the new book. You know, like I say, okay, there are things that we can do individually, and that we should do individually. I mean, you know, one of the hallmarks of being a masculine man is, you know, having discipline, taking control of your life, you know, so we want to encourage people to do that. I mean, obviously we need something like MAHA to happen. We need new regulations. We need a totally new regulatory system for harmful chemicals. We need to educate children properly. We need to, you know, make sure that children are eating the right things in schools and all that kind of stuff. But the broader problem that I raise but don't necessarily answer in the book, leave as an open question, is actually like, even if we did all of those things, does masculinity have a real future? Masculinity as we understand it, have a real future in a liberal future? You know, if just liberal democracy continues as it is, and has been, you know, what place is there for men? What do men just have to be satisfied with, you know, being consumers, working an office job, all that kind of stuff? Or is there a different kind of existence that's possible outside the confines of liberal democracy? It's a real question, but it is a civilizational question. And this is what I try to say. It's like testosterone decline isn't, a niche concern.
Right.
It's actually, this is central to civilization, to understanding civilization and its future potentially, rather than just being a niche concern.
Yeah, as well as like an existential concern. Mm. And I'll just add, I think, you know, a lot of times you hear like, you know, what do we need to do? God, how many pull-ups does the man do? I mean, I was impressed he could do one. He's done like 15. He did 20 pull-ups at like 70 years old. That is making me feel bad. I can do pull-ups. Don't worry about that. But this is something where, education actually has like a very tangible positive effect. Like, a lot of times, like, we're dealing with these big things and it's like, you hear people go, well, people just need to be educated. And you're like, well, what is educating going to do to stop a genocide happening or whatever? But in this case, education is key. If people knew what they're eating, they'll stop eating it. If they, you know, knew which purchase, you know, which products had the plastics and which ones didn't, they would make the right choice. Mm. So this is a place where literally education, especially education of moms, I mean, I'm pretty hardcore about it. My wife is like crazy about this stuff, and it makes sense. It's how you should be. And so, you know, she is constantly just researching and finding out how to protect our kids from all this stuff. And that's what you need on an individual level, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah. Mothers are very important. And I think fathers and male role models are important too, because of course, education isn't just about, you know, spurting a load of information at people. It's actually leading by example, which we were talking about. And so, I mean, one of the things that I think is so corrosive about modern day life, modern education, is the fact that actually most kids, most boys, will be educated throughout their childhood and teenage years by women.
Entirely,
The teachers are all women. I mean, male teachers are in a minority.
And even if they are male teachers, they're so beaten down by the feminized system that it's not like they can express things as a male anyway. They have to sort of take the corporate sexless angle anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah, so we need men. We need men in the right positions. You know, we're probably the only society in history that has actually entrusted the raising of young men to women.
Right. No, it makes sense.
You know, I mean, if you told a traditional tribal society, oh yeah, what you should do is you should, you know, allow the young men to be raised as men by the women, they'd be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, it literally makes no sense.
You know, so we've got to do, education is very, very important, but particular kinds of education, I think.
Absolutely. You really do. You need a curmudgeonly old uncle is what you need. That's, to toughen you up a little bit. I remember it was my mom's brother, my great uncle, and he would just go out of his way to be mean to me. And I know I sound probably like bitter about this, but I genuinely appreciate, because I have two sisters, And so he would like, he would literally like be like, I have gifts, and like they'd get like golden chains, and then I would just get literally like rusty chain, like just like something dirty. Just, and I remember my dad at one point being like, you know, he doesn't dislike, you know why he's doing that, right? And I'm like, yeah, 'cause I'm a boy. He's like, yeah, you're a boy and he wants to toughen you up. And it's like, I don't know. I could just see my uncle being like, this kid's too soft. I got to be mean to him. I appreciate it, Uncle Bill. Thank you.
But you know what's funny is that actually this is a genuine documented anthropological phenomenon across societies. It's called something like the joking uncle.
Right.
Where actually, you know, you see in traditional societies, the role of the uncle is to do exactly what your uncle did, is to be this kind of playful antagonist who is kind of egging on the young men or the young man to kind of develop in particular ways, and he has this jokey relationship that's very different from the relationship of the father to the son.
Of course, yeah.
It's not like young boys need that. It's actually real. Like you need to be prodded and poked, and you need to develop some resilience and a self-deprecating humor. You need to be able to laugh at yourself. You need to be able to laugh at misfortune. Yeah, your sisters are given, you know, nice presents, and you're given a piece of coal. And like, you know, if you can laugh at that as a young child and you can deal with that, then you're actually in a position where, you know, you're kind of fortified for life. And that's really, you know, that's how you make people strong. And that's what liberals don't really understand, is that you don't make people strong by insulating them from harm. You make people strong by exposing them in increments to harm.
Harm that they can handle, that they can deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, you've done that to a child, and then you get a man who can go to war and run into machine gun fire.
Right. There are just so many things like that. 'Cause again, I just see connections to health overall and the immune system, and this idea that, oh, there's a virus, everybody go inside and shut the door. It's literally the opposite. You need exposure to this stuff in order to become strong. Wow. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. And of course the thing about that also was the understanding that, like, just because somebody else has something doesn't mean you've been deprived of anything. Mm. Right. That was actually the lesson that he was trying to teach me, was like, look, if I give your sister something, I haven't stolen anything from you. Mm. You have not been harmed. Mm. Why aren't you happy your sister got something? And that, I think, is like a key understanding. There, over New Year's, there was, in France, where all the fireworks were going off, there was a crowd was shining lasers at the people on the balconies. And it's like, what the hell? They didn't steal anything from you. It's not like if they weren't up there, you'd be up there. But there's this jealousy, envy that's so pernicious and dangerous. And I think, and I see it in my own kids, and it's hard to know how to go, look, nothing was stolen from you, kid. Mm. Your sister got something you didn't. Good for her. Be happy. Mm. I think that's a really key sort of underlying psychological thing that people are missing these days.
Yeah, and I think also what that points to, too, is that there is, I mean, we've been talking about politics as a biological phenomenon. There is a biological basis to leftism, and I think leftism harnesses particular instincts and directs them and shapes them in particular ways. And yes, I mean, kids are envious of each other, but a properly functioning right-wing society, or just a normal society, knocks that out of them and shows them how low it is, and that actually, look, okay, you know, you've got to be able to deal with this because life isn't fair. You know, like you think Christmas time isn't fair, maybe because you didn't get, you know, everything you want. Well, guess what it's going to be like when you're an adult and you're providing for a family and you have to go out and work and fight to exist. But yeah, the left really does harness these almost like they are childlike emotions. Yeah. They're childish emotions. It's like you should grow out of thinking that just because someone else has something you don't, that they've stolen it from you, that it's all a zero-sum game. But no, instead, what the left does is they allow those petty instincts that should be knocked out of people to grow and take on this monstrous form where it's actually the entirety of society needs to be upended, and whole classes of people need to be murdered, need to be taken out into a field and, you know, shot and thrown in a trench because they have more than you, maybe because they've worked harder than you.
Right. But that can't be it. No,
no, of course not.
Yeah. And so they take these bad instincts, these bad impulses that we have, but they're useful to them because they can sort of twist them and go, not only are you being deprived, everybody's being deprived. So by latching onto that and pursuing that seething hatred you feel, you're a hero because you're defending all these others who don't have it. So it turns that vice into a virtue, falsely, obviously. Let's go to Hobbs in Nebraska. He has a question for you, sir. Hobbs in Nebraska, you're on air with Raw Egg Nationalists. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. It is your boy Hobbs from Roads to Liberty. As usual, open invitation if any of you guys want to come on. Harrison, please fill the good doctor in on who I am and what I do. Now, I don't have a question about cheese so much as I do, I've been listening to InfoWars most of today. I've caught most of the good doctor's segments, especially when he's talking about how we've kind of lost sight of our ancestral diet. And it reminds me of an article that actually my mom showed me the other day. One of humanity's oldest foods, cheese. And it turns out that almost 90% of the cheese that's made in the United States is made with a synthetic GMO rennet that is patented by Pfizer.
I knew when you said 90% of cheese made in the U.S., whatever comes next
it's
is going to
be bad.
Bad, yeah, it's going to be bad. I maybe heard about that at one point. That's disgusting.
Yeah, it's disgusting, and it's becoming more prevalent outside the U.S. as well. And so you'll find even in the U.K., you'll find, if you go on a nice cheese. I mean, I went to Paris for New Year, right, and I had some really crazy cheese. Like, I ended up, my policy actually for buying cheese was, okay, go in the fromagerie and select the cheese that looks like it's been in the bin the longest. And then
that worked out for you.
It was, they were all delicious, like these horrible goat's cheeses that were like green and right. Sort of suppurating, but like they were so good. But, so I went home and I was like, okay, I want to get some of this stuff at home. And so I was on these fancy websites, looking at expensive French cheeses, and they would say, natural rennet, made with natural rennet, non-GMO rennet. So it's a big thing that people don't know about. You think, cheese, it's just milk and
right.
it's a traditional product and it's made in the traditional way. No, rennet has been replaced, traditional rennet extracted from the stomachs of sheep and cows, because that's what it is. It's an enzyme that makes milk coagulate and separate into curds and whey. That's been replaced by GMO. So people are eating cheese, even expensive cheese in the US, and they're consuming GMO without their knowledge. I mean, it's just really what it is it's just yet another indictment of the way that the food supply has been organized, right? It's like, right. You think you're paying good money to eat some nice cheese and you think, oh, this is healthy, this is going to do me some good. And actually you are consuming GMO without your knowledge. And nobody thought that that would be a bad idea, and that actually, it should be prevented, and actually, you should preserve traditional food ways and methods of making food, and B, that consumers deserve to be informed about the choices that they're making.
Right.
And deserve to have options as well, because that's the other thing. 90% of cheese. So it's like, okay, so you've really got to go out of your way in the US to get cheese that isn't made with GMO, that doesn't right. contain GMO. And we don't know that GMO is safe. They've never done the testing, So actually you have every legitimate reason not to want to put GMO in your body.
But they don't tell you that it's there. I guess it's obvious, because if people had the choice, they'd almost certainly choose the not GMO version. So they can't let you make that choice. And that's very, very interesting. Let's go to Jay in Wisconsin. Jay in Wisconsin, thank you for calling in. You're on the air.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I just wanted to first say I love you guys very much, and I appreciate everything that you've done, and I do miss Chase. I don't know where he's been, but I do appreciate him.
We miss him, too. He's very happy in Nashville, and he's doing a new show, too. So he's good, but awesome. we miss him as well.
My whole thought was, I caught the tail end of what you were talking about with the hero's journey and George R. R. Martin and I believe it was Lord of the Rings. And I found it interesting that we used to have stories of the hero's journey and defeating the bad guy. And now I don't know if we're seeing more of it, but we're seeing either the idea of the good guy losing. I think that one of your callers a couple months ago mentioned the movie Cell. And the whole premise is this guy is trying to save his son, only to find that his son was corrupted, even though he didn't realize it. And and basically he gets corrupted as well as everyone else. And all the That's the Plan movies, where the bad guys are actually winning.
And yeah, well, it's a very common thing, and I remember hearing about this, and it's sort of hitting me back when even like Twilight became a thing, and it was somebody going, wait, vampires are the good guys now? And it's like, wait, that is kind of weird. Why are the blood-sucking people being celebrated? But everything's inverted now. The heroes are all the villains at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's a very, very noticeable, very, very noticeable tendency in modern storytelling.
Yeah.
Like it's something sophisticated. I mean, and I can kind of, you know, see where it's coming from. Like, actually, okay, well, let's tell a non-standard story. But when you make it the default mode of storytelling, it loses any kind of shock. It loses any kind of novelty, and it becomes tiresome. But by becoming tiresome and so prevalent, it becomes demoralizing. And I think that is in large part the purpose of this kind of stuff is demoralization. It's like, no, you can't, you know, you have these tired notions about morality and about good and evil. Well, actually they're not, you know, you're bad for wanting to be good because you're mistaken. Right. And by being mistaken, you're imposing this kind of idealistic vision on the world. And you think that you can, you know, you can be better than everyone else, but we're all down in the mud, you know, stabbing each other in the back. I mean, it's a terrible, terrible thing to want to present, you know, to the next generation.
Yeah. Right? Well, and it just goes back to what we were saying earlier, where, you know, but imagine it from the bug perspective. It's like, what? Imagine from the orcs. It's like, okay, if you were actually imagining it from the orc point of view, your brain would just be eat, kill, eat, kill. Like, these people are evil. Like, what are you talking about? So, yeah, it is a ubiquitous phenomenon these days. It probably started with Wicked, which of course became a big Hollywood production recently, but that was sort of the first where it was like, but what if we take Wizard of Oz, but from the witch's perspective? And that was in the 70s, but it's gone off the rails since then. Looks like we have time for one more call here. We'll go to, let's go to Shay in Oklahoma, on line 9. Shay in Oklahoma, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. Thank you. Hi, Harrison. This is Shay. I remember talking to you a long time ago.
I remember. Thanks for calling back.
We discussed about Pam Bondi.
Yes.
And how she's not doing a job. And now she has, what is that guy, Radcliffe?
Yep.
We are not doing anything. We are not catching anybody. We are not putting anybody in jail. Everybody is just walking around free. And what's happening in Minneapolis and all, it's just giving more power. I understand that they got subpoenaed. And look at this. Bill Clinton and Hillary never showed up and nothing's happening. Cuomo just talks big. Jordan just talks big. And you know what gets me? Trump just talks, oh, Lindsey Graham is great. Oh, look, this guy is great. Oh,
so I actually heard a very interesting theory about this just before the show today, that Lindsey Graham, basically that Trump, the whole, so about a week ago, we were like on the cusp of bombing Iran, right? And it was this big thing. And basically what this guy said was Trump was telling everybody, including Lindsey Graham and Mossad, basically, yeah, we're going to go to war with Iran. So they sent all their Mossad agents out to start this big, to start these big riots. And then Trump said, you know, never mind, we're not going to bomb. So we totally set up. And so maybe part of his like celebrating Lindsey Graham is to convince them like, yeah, I'm totally on your side. We're totally going to do this. Only at the last minute to go, no, we're not going to do that, causing them to burn all of their networks in Iran, but not actually achieve anything. So his friendship with Lindsey Graham may be a little bit of a bluff. I don't know, but I thought that was an interesting take on it. What do you think about Trump's friendship with old Lindsey?
I don't think Trump likes Lindsey Graham.
I hope not.
No, I don't think he does at all. I mean, you know, he's Mr. Art of the Deal, and obviously, you know, in public he has to kind of schmooze and stuff, but no, I don't think he likes him at all.
I sure hope not. That would be a very strange development. Raw Egg Nationalist Dr. Charles Cornish Dale at BabyGravy9, rawegnationalist.com. That's where you get the book, The Last Men, Liberalism and the Death of Masculinity. We'll see you tomorrow, folks.
People can use this as a teaching moment. That, you know, I see a lot of these people out there who think they can imitate Alex Jones, and they have never understood the amount of work that goes in to the detailed reports that you do. But the second part is, okay, if you're out there and you want to be Alex Jones or replicate Alex Jones, Alex teaches you the way to do it, just pay attention. One is learn history. Understand history. Understand what templates to look for. Once you understand that, you understand what the play is going to look like. And then you're just looking to for who to cast in what roles. Because you understand the broader course of history, how these things tend to operate, how assassinations tend to occur, how cover-ups tend to happen, how false flags occur, how staged events occur, how also could the various forms of COINTELPRO type psyops to infiltrate dissident movements to distract them from the real conspiracy into fake conspiracy in order to feed a fake conspiracies into people who otherwise would be investigating the real conspiracy. Also to act as a discrediting agent. So learn the methodologies, learn how to look at what's, how to review sources, how to understand the psychology of the participants involved. Once you understand that, you can be much more accurate and predictive at what took place with more explanatory power and more predictive capacity. And that's what Alex does, is massive amounts of work that starts with understanding history.
Welcome to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing, and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster. Every crisis is an opportunity, and the world will be reshaped in our vision. Down with the globalist. Get ultra-methylene red at the Alex Jones.